This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
You ever seen that show Cops? Well, I was watching it one time, and there was this cop on. He was talking about this gunfight he had in the hallway with this guy, right? And he just unloaded on this guy, and nothing happened. He didn't hit nothing. Okay, it was just him and this guy. I mean, you know, it's freaky, but it happens.
Look, you want to play blind man, go walk with a shepherd. But me, my eyes are wide open.
What the f*** does that mean?
I mean, that's it for me. From here on in, you can consider my ass retired.
Jesus Christ.
Don't blaspheme.
God damn it.
I said don't do that.
Hey, you know, you're freaking out on us.
Look, I'm telling Marcellus today. I'm through.
But why don't you tell him at the same time why?
Don't worry, I will.
Yeah, and I'll bet you $10,000 he lasts his ass off.
I don't give a damn if he does.
Marvin, what do you make of all this?
Man, I don't even have an opinion.
Well, you gotta have an opinion. I mean, do you think that God came down from heaven and stopped it?
Oh, man,
I shot Marvin in the face.
Why the f*** did you do that?
Well, I didn't mean to do it. It was an accident.
Oh, man, I see some crazy-ass s*** in my time, but this...
Chill out, man. I told you it was an accident. You probably went over a bump or something.
Hey, the car ain't hit no motherfucking bump.
Hey, look, man, I didn't mean to shoot the son of a bitch. The gun went off. I don't know why.
Well, look at this f***ing mess, man. We're on a city street in broad daylight here.
Believe it, man.
Well, believe it now, motherfucker. We gotta get this car off the road. You know, cops tend to notice s*** like you're driving a
just
car. Blood.
Just take it to a friendly place, that's all.
This is the Valley, Vincent. Marcellus ain't got no friendly places
in
the Valley.
Well, you sit my f***ing down, man!
It is 22 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of November in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, this, my friends, is the Rick Emerson radio program. I am he. Thank you for joining us today. It is Thursday, and it is November 18th, 2010. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to day 12. It is 503-505-6964 if you would like to join us today. 503-505-6964 if you would like to get on board with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, musings of an ironic nature. Whatever it is you would like to share with the assembled masses, yearning to breathe free and to be amused. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. That's where you can also send a Skype message if you'd like to do that. That is Rick Emerson Show via Skype. Rick Emerson Show. Via Skype. You can also email if you'd like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Or Don Taylor can be reached at Don, D-A-W-N, D-A-W-N at rickemerson.com. The text box is open and so forth. And we start this off with a message from listener Mark, who is in California, and says, good afternoon to you poor buggers in rainy Portland, followed by a winky, smiley emoticon wearing a clown hat. Thanks. Appreciate that. Right.
What's the emoticon for poking someone in the eye?
I don't really know, but I think we should learn it. Do you ever do this? Let's just speak honestly. Let's just speak as Ricky Roma would say. Let's speak as men. Do you use emoticons when you send emails?
Rarely, but on occasion.
But you do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you say lol?
No.
Really?
Really.
Do you do much like instant messaging?
No, not
See,
very much.
And I try not to do that, but it's like occasionally, like somebody, like I'll get, do you ever get ambushed? Where it's like you're logged into email or something, like if you're doing a web-based email, and it's like the chat thing is just like it opens by default, and the next thing you know, there's like a, and you have a, hey, what's up today, you know, with a Z today, and you're like, and it doesn't say, you know, you don't have the thing on like hide or invisible or whatever, like they can tell you're there.
Yeah.
And you just can't be like, log out, gone.
I have literally like two people that I'm pleased to see, you know, pop up on chat, which is why, like, you know, the Gmail thing always says that I'm busy.
Yeah.
And I try to turn off everything when I was working for Cinematical, it's owned by AOL, and we were all instructed to own to get like the AOL Instant Messenger.
Have it running all the time.
And we were supposed to have it running all the time when we were like, you know, working so they could get a hold of us. And I would always forget to turn it on because I just, you know, I don't, whatever it is I'm doing on the computer, it is not something that I want to be talking to someone else in a little box while I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I'm either working or I'm like watching a movie or I'm just surfing the web and being kind of lazy. And none of those things are something where I want to be like stopping every 10 seconds to type something in a chat box because I'm having a conversation with someone.
Here's the thing about instant messaging that's kind of a pain. And I don't mean to complain about this. I really don't. But it's a, I talked about, you know, going on the, remember that, I don't know, it was like maybe 6 weeks or so ago we were here and that young man called in because I'd been on Facebook and he had messaged me with like his lady problems. He's
yes.
like, Rick Emerson, how can I get a girl to like me? And I was, you know, which is just hilarious in any number of levels. But I, you know, and I'd gone back and forth.
Being such an expert on the art of romance.
That's right. Yeah, ladies love cool Rick. So there's nobody more qualified to give romantic advice than myself. But, you know, but I answered him, and we would talk back and forth or whatever. You know, it's not like I don't mind that. But I do remember that during that conversation, you know, cause you're on Facebook and people can see that you're there. And like I had 5 or 6 other, you know, just these are people just going like, hey, love the show, which is great. And again, I really it's not that I'm complaining, but it is. Here is a truth of instant messaging. The problem is that people, as opposed to like being in a social setting, like at a party, people can't see if you're already having a conversation.
Right.
Like if there was, you know, some guy at a party, he's already talking to somebody or juggling 2 or 3 different conversations, you wouldn't go up and then just interject yourself and try to carry on an entirely separate conversation with him. And I don't know, people wouldn't intentionally do that online except they just have no way of knowing if you were already occupied. And so then, then it's like you have the choice of either just logging off or going into invisible or whatever or trying to balance like numerous people. And I think a lot, it's not like that's just a me thing. I like a lot of people have that because email programs, so often they will do that thing of automatically adding anybody you talk to like your contact list or your yes. whatever. And then immediately, the minute you go online, there they are.
Well, I also have the thing where if somebody like writes something to me and I know it's real time, I feel obligated then to respond like right now.
Right.
And I know people who actually IM all the time, if when they do it like regularly and they know it, they realize that the person on the other end is busy and is doing other things. And they understand if there's a 5 or 10 or 15 minute lag before there's an answer. But I'm not used to it. So I was like, oh, crap, I got to stop what I'm doing and answer them right now.
Yeah.
And then I just don't want to do it with anyone because I don't want anyone to think I don't like them. Or that I'm mad at them,
so
or that I'm stuck
everyone.
Up.
Everyone. You would prefer to shun everybody so that you're shunning no one.
Yeah, because what I really don't like is I don't like IMing.
Right.
But I don't want if, like, somebody, I'm like, hey, hi, how you doing? And then, like, 5 minutes later, I'm like, gotta go, busy, that, you know. And then I brush them off. I don't want them, you know, I want everyone to love me is basically my problem. And I don't want them to think ill of me when, in fact, it's not really them.
The best part is
the medium.
The best part is that you want everybody to love you at the same time that you don't want to speak to them.
Right.
You want it to be a solely one-way relationship where they love you and that you ignore them.
I want them to love me from afar.
Okay. You and I really are the same person. There really is no difference between us. I mean, that's pretty much it. It's just the boobs that separate us. Let's see. I think somebody has phoned in to begin the program today. All right. Sir or madam, as the case may be, you are setting the tone for the entire program. It is your call that will determine whether the rest of this program is a glorious success or a desperate, shame-filled failure. Who might this be on this Thursday morning? That's great. That's wonderful.
No one.
And I guess it's afternoon anyway. Hello there. Hi. You know, I can see that you're still on the line is the thing. Okay, thank you.
Not.
All right, thanks. Bye. All right, appreciate it.
So it's just somebody just wanted to see if it worked?
How did that phone operate anyway? And then they just dialed the number, and they said, and I could see, you know, because with the phone, you can see that somebody's there. When somebody hangs up, yeah. It disconnects the call. I could see that they were just sitting there. And then as soon as, you know, the second hello, then they're gone. That's great. Wonderful. Yeah. The rest of the show just implodes. It's on you, whoever you are. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Now, see, now they're calling back.
Okay.
Do I even want to answer it?
Well, yeah, because maybe they want to apologize. Say, oh, I messed something up or my phone wasn't
working. Pardon me, Rick Emerson. Forgive my rudeness. Hello, hi. You're on the Rick Emerson Radio Program, sir or madam, is the case, maybe.
Hey, Rick, it's Ben the Builder.
I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
It's Ben the Builder.
Hello, Ben the Builder. How are you, sir?
Hey, good. Hey, I just ordered my first McRib, and I need to know if I need to eat it with the pickles and onions or just with the McRib alone.
First of all, I would like to commend you for calling to ask us this question. You have phoned the right program to solve this query for you. Secondly, I will say that the answer I'm going to give you is a combination of my experience and our friend Keelan in Las Vegas, who is the knower of all things McRib-based. Thirdly, the answer is with onions, without pickles. That's the way you want to go with that. You want to go without pickles, but with onions. When you say you're about to order your first McRib, or you just ordered your first McRib, where are you? Are you on your way there, or are you at the drive-thru, or is it sitting in front of you?
Yeah, sorry, it's actually sitting in front of me, and I think I called you about 5 seconds ago, and I don't know what happened, but now I'm just going to pick those pickles off, and hopefully it doesn't disturb the essence of the McRib.
Because as I didn't really know why the pickles, you know, on or off was such a, you know, the big deal. I didn't know why it mattered, but Keelan put it in a way that made a lot of sense. He said, think about it. You're basically having, you know, something that is a replication of ribs. He's like, if you go to a barbecue, you know, sometimes there's onions in the, you know, in like the sauce or the marinade or whatever. But he's like, you don't go to a barbecue and put pickles on your ribs. And I said, no, I do not. And he said, so there you go. No pickles on the McRib. Would you like us just, we could sit here while you try your first bite if you like.
Sure. Let's see here. I have to do this semi-one-handed here. I actually pulled off to the side.
Are you in the restaurant or are you in your car right now?
I'm in my car.
Okay. What part of town are you in, if I can ask?
Hillsborough.
Okay, so
you're not driving, are you?
Well, he might be.
I'm in my car. It is in drive, but I'll put it in.
No, he might be in a Bluetooth or something. Are you using your headset to call, sir?
No, I'm actually talking into my phone.
Excellent. All right, wonderful.
Yeah, see, okay. One hand for the phone, one hand for the wheel, one hand for the McRib. Something's wrong here.
Okay, so here's the unboxing of the McRib.
All right, and you pulled off to the side of the road. Now, are you off to the side of the highway or a side street or a main thoroughfare? What kind of road are you on?
I'm just in the McDonald's parking lot.
Okay, I see.
I hope you're not at 82nd and Powell, because that is a death trap.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. All right, so did you get anything to go with this? Did you get a side dish, perhaps, or a beverage of some kind?
I do have my Coke, which, by the way, I don't know how or why, but McDonald's has the best Coke in the world.
There is
not
something
from a bottle.
No, there's something to be said about that. You're right, and I think the answer is, that they put a lot of ice in it. And I think there is some. Have you noticed this, Don? That drinks with ice are better than drinks without ice.
Oh yeah, I drink everything with ice when possible.
There's something about that, and let's also speak another truth about McDonald's. They have the best fast food French fries on planet Earth. I mean, even better than In-N-Out, which I didn't think was possible.
But McDonald's, they are experts at the syrup to carbonated water ratio of their fountain drinks.
Is that a thing you can adjust?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
All right, so it's unboxed, sir.
No, it's still, I'm noting the box. It kind of looks like it should be a hot dog just because it's kind of a wider and shallower box. And on the front of it, it says McRib Tangy Temptation.
No, it's true.
I'm not quite sure about that yet. So, your old friend is back. It's a telltale sign of the tangy barbecue sauce that's left its mark on your lips, yada, yada, yada. Okay, so we open it up, and it's just a giant mess. Barbecue sauce everywhere, so I'll have to do that a bit. We have two small slices of pickle on there. So we're just going to take that off.
Yeah, you don't want the pickles.
And put it back together.
Friends, you're listening to Life As It Happens here on the Rick Emerson radio program. You are listening to one man's existence unfold before you.
Yeah, so again, I've never had one of these before, and I have to say I'm a fast food connoisseur, kind of like yourself, I imagine.
You never forget your first time.
No, this will stay with you forever. Someday you'll be sitting on the porch of the old folks' home regaling the nurses with the tale of the day you had your first McRib. If I were to ask you this right now, before you try McRib, if I were to ask you your favorite fast food outlet or a restaurant, would you say that it is McDonald's, or would you what's at the top of the list?
No, I'd say Carl's Jr. I really like their $6 burgers. Mm.
Now, can I tell you this? Maybe this makes me a bad American or a bad consumer. And even saying this out loud, it seems like it can't be true, and yet it is true. In my life, I have never gone to Carl's Jr., and I don't know how that's possible. It seems like I should have, and I just never have for whatever reason. So you think I'm missing out by not going there?
Yeah. You know, they got pretty good stuff. And it's my favorite. I like Burger King as well, but you mentioned on your show the other day that I think they're on their way out. They're not really doing much to keep up with the competition that is the McRib.
Well, it's like, what is the last thing that Burger King created that stands out as being an interesting product? I mean, I can't even – the last thing I remember Burger King doing, I mean, apart from their advertising, which is pretty interesting, and they go with the whole – the Evil King and the whatever, the last food item that Burger King you know, created or altered, or the last thing they introduced that made any kind of a splash was when they did that thing of reformulating their French fries some years back because they wanted them to taste more like McDonald's fries. And instead, it just tastes like you were eating strips of formica. I mean, they were brittle and unpleasant. Dawn, you have
I will say Burger King now has something that they call the Steakhouse Burger, and it's very good.
Now, is it just like a steak sandwich?
It's kind of like the $6 burger at Carl's Jr. It's a really higher quality of beef, and it's just a big, heavy, thick burger on a much better quality bun. It's like a real, honestly, like restaurant hamburger.
Okay.
It's very good.
Here's the thing. The next time Sarah and Greg are on one of our Friday shows for a crossover, we each ought to bring one fast food sandwich.
Okay.
And then we'll cut it into, like, fourths, you know, and then we'll have, like, a little bit of a tasting. All right. Okay. So, are you prepared now to have your first your first bite of McRib, sir?
I am.
All right.
All right. Here goes.
Okay.
I can hear his lips smacking.
sort of off putting.
The sound of eating.
Sound of meat filled pleasure.
Mmm. And. Ben, you okay there?
Oh, seriously. If I hear choking sounds, I'm hanging at the phone. Oh, God, I think we got disconnected. Oh, now I'll never know. All right, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Are you back? All right, hello.
Yes. I don't know what happened here. Maybe it was just the sauce flying around, but, you
really?
Know,
that was just like the film breaking right before you find out who Kaiser Soze is. Okay, so what was your take on the McRib, sir, now having ingested it for the first time?
It's too bland. It doesn't taste like anything.
So you're saying that it lacks the zing. It lacks the spice of a regular barbecue sandwich.
Yeah, I feel like I'm just eating a bunch of bread.
Okay, fair enough. I could see that. I mean, do you eat a lot of barbecue? Do you eat ribs? As a general course of events.
Yeah, I get my own smoker, so I Traeger ribs.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing is you gotta sort of free your mind from the expectation that you're going to be replicating your own rib or barbecue experience. Because McDonald's, and look, I'll tell you this. I mean, I really did, and I honestly did, the McRib is pretty good. And it tasted a lot like, were you just having a shot of something over there, Dawn?
Yes.
What were you having a shot of?
Whiskey.
Okay. The McRib tastes a lot like a sandwich that they used to sell at Plaid Pantry, which I know sounds weird, but it was called the Big AZ, and it was a sort of tangified beef sandwich. The McRib, is good largely because I associated it with that. You have to lose the expectation that you're going to be replicating ribs as you know them, because you figure the McDonald's thing is consistency, right? Everywhere you go in the country tastes the same, and they got to make that for everybody. From sea to shining sea, including people in Utah. So that's why it's a little bit bland. It would be my estimation that if you were to, and this may be more work than you want to go to, but if you were to take the McRib and then, maybe you bring along, or when you go home, you just add a little bit of hot sauce to the top of it, it might actually fix that and make it a perfect sandwich for you if you augment that with a little spice of your own.
Or I could leave it in the refrigerator for about 5 days and might be better.
Don't let Dawn anywhere near your house, though. All right. I'm glad that you tried it, though, because, see, now you can say you can check it off the list of things you need to do. On the bingo game of your existence, sir, it's been taken care of.
Perfect.
Excellent. Thank you, my friend. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, bye.
All right, there you go. That's Ben. Well, I'm sad that he was underwhelmed by the whole thing.
Yeah.
What can you do? Well, they can't all be winners, you know.
No. Right. But you got to give it a try. I had last week, I think it was, I tried a Jack in the Box pastrami sandwich for the first time. So they have a grilled pastrami and cheese sandwich. And it was a weird thing because it's not terrible. It's a good quality pastrami, just not nearly enough of it.
Right.
Because,
is it thick or thin?
It's thin.
Okay, that's good.
Thin.
It's the way it should be.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, the whole thing.
The thin
slice.
Pastrami. That's the way it ought to be.
Yeah, it's right thin, but it's also kind of chopped up because they don't want you to choke on anything. Everything has to be, easily eaten while you're in your car. But it had pickles on it. which seemed just weird and wrong.
Yeah, no.
But at the same time, though, it was kind of, I think I kind of understood why they did it, because they were really very super crisp dill chips. And it actually, in a way, it actually sort of evokes that whole feeling of being in like a deli and eating the pastrami sandwich and having the pickle on the side.
I was going to ask, actually. Now, our Hebrew friends, they don't put pickle on the pastrami sandwich typically, but it's on the table.
Yeah.
Like, you'll be sometimes there and they get like the little tub or the whatever, not a tureen, it's a thing. But they get a thing of pickles sometimes, or you get the pickle on the plate when it arrives.
Yeah, you usually get the spear of dill pickle, half a dill pickle.
Where is it that there's a place here that's actually not too bad? Is it Kornblatt? Is that what I'm thinking of?
Where
it's like, there's like a little, it's a crock. That's what the word I'm looking at. There's a little crock of dill pickles just at the table, which is, it's not chilled as such, but it's, you know, but it's like they take them out of the thing and they put them on the table, I think, when you sit down. So it's, you know, it's not like a soggy room temperature pickle. It has a crisp snap to it, because a good, you know, like a good kosher dill, that's a slice of heaven's what that is. That's a fine thing.
Yeah, I've yet to go to Kenny and Zook's, but beyond that, I've been disappointed in all my other so-called deli experiences.
How is it that you've never gone to Kenny and Zook's? What is up with that?
I don't know. Never, they haven't done it yet.
You've never had the pastrami nachos?
No, I have not had pastrami nachos.
Oh, my God. Okay.
I don't, believe me, I don't think that would be something I would order under normal circumstances.
No. Well, you don't even need to order, because Rick Emerson will bring it to you. Here's the thing about the pastrami nachos is that they're really not even traditional nachos, because they're basically made with French fries. They're pastrami and cheese fries. No. They're fantastic.
Okay.
You have no idea. You don't even know. Storm was the one who introduced me to the chili or the pastrami cheese fries at Kenny and Zook's.
Okay.
So she and I were getting together for lunch, I don't know, last year sometime, and she's like, well, have you had the pastrami cheese fries? I said no. She's like, oh, Poopy, you don't even know. And so the next thing I knew, it's like there I am at Kenny and Zook's, and Storm is ordering and I said, well, maybe I should get, you know, like a half one. She's like, baby, they only come in one size. And that size is massive. It's like a platter. Seriously, the thing is like the size of the table. And here's the thing about...
Well, how is the quality of their pastrami? Is it really good?
It's good. It's good. I mean, it's, you know, people will say, is it like in New York? But it's... Really, unless...
Well, I've never had pastrami in New York, but I have had... I did frequent Jewish delis in L.A., and so I do...
Yeah, I mean...
I do have a fairly high bar for deli food.
And I have eaten, you know, I guess my share of New York delis, but it's like... But unless you got them on the table right next to each other and you're going to try them to back-to-back, I mean, it's good. I'll put it that way. It's good. I had no issues with it at all. No, here's the thing about the... I'm sorry for starting off the show and just talking about food. If it makes you feel any better, there's really no food here. Here's the food we've got at the studio. There's a cookie which... And although I thank you for bringing it in, not that you should be expected to know this. I have a whole banana thing. That's one of the few foods I simply cannot take.
I had no idea that you did not eat banana.
That is one of the very few items that I cannot tolerate in any way is banana.
You'll just have to take my word for it then that I created a quite excellent banana oatmeal chocolate chip cookie with toffee pieces.
I'm sure that it's fantastic. I really, you know, in some objective sense, I have no doubt that it's a wonderful cookie. I can't eat it. We got a bag of chocolate Chex Mix on the table. But the problem is, not that I'm not appreciative of those as well, and I'll talk about my own snack food adventures last night here in just a second. But now that we've been totally derailed by listener Ben, I might as well just say this. The problem, of course, now with there being chocolate Chex Mix on the table is I'm busy talking about pastrami and cheese fries.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's like the Chex Mix doesn't really satisfy.
No.
Chocolate Chex Mix doesn't satisfy that craving.
No, now I'm thinking about pastrami, and I don't want Chex Mix.
Here's the thing about the pastrami cheese fries. First of all, at Kenny and Zook's, which is at, I think, 10th and...
We'll take my cookie back, though.
It's right by Powell's. It's at 10th and Stark, I think.
Yeah.
It's right by, you know, is it Jake's? Is that the place there?
Oh,
it's like all the gay clubs that are all right there.
Mm-hmm.
But Kenny and Zook's has fantastic French fries, and you know the weird thing is when you leave fast food restaurants and you start getting into normal mainstream fare, for some reason it's like regular restaurants have just a hell of a time making good French fries. I don't know what the hell is up with that. It's difficult sometimes to find good French fries if you are not at a drive-thru. They have exceptional French fries. I mean, just as like a regular course of action. And so they take the regular French fries, and then they just start shaving pastrami onto them, and then a layer of cheese, and then they shave pastrami, and then more fries, and then a layer of cheese.
Mm.
And then they bring it to the table, and it's just, it's so good, and it's good, and it's like you can hear the ventricles of your heart just pleading just for, you know, no, no, please, sir, no, I beg of you, oh, your blood is so thick already, you know, and you're just like, no, you know, take it like a man. And you just, you know, and you just shovel it in. And the thing is, you have to eat all of them because unlike a lot of things, they're no good heated up later on. Like the next day, I tried wrapping them up, taking them home, put them in the toaster oven. You know, not even the microwave, in the toaster oven. In the toaster oven, I put them. And they just got, it's kind of like this layer of grease on top that doesn't, they're not served well by reheating. So you either got to eat the cost or you got to eat the entire serving. One of the two.
Bridgeport Brew Pub makes these amazing beer battered French onion rings. But that's the thing is like, not only do you have to eat them like while you're in the restaurant, you have to eat them like before the end of the meal. Because once they start to cool, they just lose it.
Yeah.
But when they first come to the table and they are still crispy and sizzly, they're the most delicious things ever. But they get soggy and icky really, really fast.
Okay. By the way, somebody's recreating one of our conversations by his comment. He says, quote, a shot of what? Don. A shot of whiskey. Rick. Okay. And then he ends with, I love you guys. Never stop doing this show. Well, as long as there's whiskey and Chex Mix, sir, we'll be here for as long as you need us.
Speaking of which, we're going to be here on Thanksgiving.
God damn it. Now I'm hungry. Yes. Yes, we are. Let's talk about more things that will just give me a more acute and finely tuned sense of hunger today. We will be here a week from today. That is our big Thanksgiving spectacular. The Rick Emerson Show Thanksgiving Extravaganza happens 1 week from today. That is next Thursday, November 25th, with Don and myself and a cast of thousands, plus lots of plus just... I would imagine piles of things that are bad for us in both a culinary and an alcoholic sense. So that is next Thursday, starting at 1 p.m. We'll do Legion of News as per usual, and then we'll have the Rick Emerson radio program a little bit after 1 o'clock. That is next Thursday, live, our Thanksgiving spectacular. So be listening for details on that. All right, let me back up for 1 second. So pastrami street. So I will bring in pastrami cheese fries from Kenny and Zook's at some point.
Oh! Somebody sent me a link to the Yelp page, and there's a photo of the pastrami fries. And
okay.
I have to admit,
they look fantastic,
man,
don't
they? It looks amazing.
No, Kenny and Zook's is really good
does.
In general, and those are great. They are really, they're quite something.
Oh, my
God. Wait, let me see. See, that's what I'm talking about. How good do those look?
Oh, my God, that's massive. And, that looks good.
Can I say this one final thing about Kenny and Zook's? Kenny and Zook's, they have the Mexican Coke there. You know, I'm talking about the Coca-Cola that's from Mexico, so it's not corn syrup. It's like cane sugar or whatever, which is like, you know, and I'm not much of a soda guy. But you all, if you know the difference between Coke as they sell it in like, you know, other parts of the world and in Europe, and Coke as they sell it in North America, they have the good Coca-Cola there. Smaller bottle, too, so you can feel like you're balancing out your big fat-ass American self as you're shoveling pastrami cheese fries into your mouth. Why do we have to start talking about this? I wish you were dead.
What?
I'm sorry. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. It's Thursday. Clown Watch coming up today. Corpse Watch. Also, your Geek Watch on the way. Let's see. What else? We'll talk a little bit more about our Thanksgiving spectacular, which is coming up next Thursday. I finally watched Dexter last night, only, you know, 72 hours or something after the fact. Talk about Dexter. We got the top five coming up later on as well. It's 503-505-6964. 505-6964. Here's what I can do right now. I can read a couple of questions here that people have for us. We can talk about our trials and travails with the ink this morning, or I can ask you what you did last night.
What would you like to do?
Let me just read this.
Okay.
John asks, here's a question about Dawn. Does she have a lower jaw? Oh, he says, it's about your pictures. He says, I have seen no pictures of her where you can see below her nose, and one, she appears to be robbing a train. What is up with that? He asks, followed by, no onions, always no onions.
I have a massive jaw. I have a huge Jay Leno-like jaw. I'm like Bruce Campbell from the nose down.
Now,
it's terrifying.
Is that your answer, or is that your real answer?
No, that's just...
Your jaw isn't huge.
No, I have a pudgy face and a double chin, and I don't like it, so... I prefer to not, I don't, when I see photos of myself, I generally do not like the ones where you can see my entire face.
Yeah, but I think everybody's that way. Nobody looks at a photo and goes, I look awesome in this photograph.
But I'm the one who gets to pick the pictures, and so that's how it works out.
All right, well, fair enough. Let's see, this says, Rick, you are wrong, it is Chick-fil-A who has the best fries, not McDonald's. Who the hell doesn't like bananas? You are a freak. All right, thank you,
that's
sir.
That's nice.
I appreciate that.
I got some more suggestions for my ringtone, by the way. And I've never heard of any of the songs.
What Well, let me let you finish choking that cookie down, and we'll return to that in just one moment. So that is all coming up. We got the Clown Watch, Corpse Watch, Geek Watch on the way. Your top five, a little bit of a Dexter recap and so forth. Let's see, a couple final notes here. Carl's Jr. has the best chicken sandwich of any fast food restaurant I know of, and I have searched far and wide, says this man. Let's see, and finally, I'm off in the backyard to play some pool with a beer while listening to your show in the sunshine. Fantastic. By the way, he says, best fries are Wendy's, or those with the skins on them at Carl's Jr. The best burgers at In-N-Out, that is the double cheese. All right, so there you go. This is like an entire show just designed to augment all the pangs occurring inside my stomach right now. Okay. It's 503-505-6964.
You should eat breakfast.
Yeah, but it's not normally an issue. You know what I mean? Like, I don't eat. I'm not a guy who eats breakfast. I don't know the last. I don't think I was ever a person who really ate breakfast. You know, my first meal of the day is usually somewhere in the afternoon. I'll eat my first meal at like 3 or 4, and then I have something at like 10, and then if I'm up really really late, like at 3 or 4 in the morning, I'll have a little bit of snack. But otherwise, I really only eat 2 meals a day. I have never. There's that whole thing about if people say,
how much of that is healthy food?
Almost none of it, I would imagine. And that's actually not true. See, I'm saying that reflexively to be kooky. But that's. I really only have two modes. I have the mode where I just eat crap. And then I have the mode where I just eat nothing. I eat nothing. When I say health food, I don't mean like wheat germ or some hippie nonsense. I eat very simply. Because, you know, here's the thing about me. The thing about me is that I don't really care about food. That's the deal. Now, it doesn't mean like I don't have things that I like, or, you know, like, you know, indulgences or whatever you're going to call them. I've talked about, the spray cheese or Chex Mixers. I like that stuff. But it's like if you told me I had to go a month without any of that, like, I'd be okay. Or if you just said, like, look, you can't have any junk food or any, like, you know, you can't have any snack or, you know, drive-through food or whatever for the next 30 days or 60 days. I might not be crazy about that idea, but it wouldn't bother me that much. Like, for example, I will get on these streaks. Greg Nibbler and I were talking about this. I hope they've talked about this. So Greg is going on this diet because apparently, in an echo of someone we just heard from, Greg apparently saw a photograph of himself and didn't really care for what it showed. Apparently and Greg, you know, he's a good-looking guy. Doesn't seem like, I mean, yeah. You know, he's a little greasy-looking, but that's not going to be cured by going
he
on a diet.
In Portland.
Yeah, well, and it's also like he's on the radio, so like what does he care, you know? Yeah. But he cleans up well. But he said he saw like a press photo of himself or like a headshot for his, you know, his acting stuff. And he saw that and he was just like, oh, I'm just so bloated. And so now he's going on a diet. And Greg and I were sort of, I don't know, it's like one step away from just sitting and doing each other's rouge or something. Greg and I were talking about diets. And I mentioned, he talked about getting through college or getting through school or whatever on a bit like, he would just go on like the tuna fish diet. And that's the thing I do every time I get fired. Whenever I get fired, it's a combination of like saving money and self-loathing that kicks in, where it's like, I don't deserve anything good. Also, I'm poor. And so I will immediately just default to the diet of like tuna fish with whatever, whether it's like a tuna melt or just like, I will do the thing where I just get like the bowl and I put in like the 2 or 3 cans of tuna, chop up a little bit of cheese, you melt it, and like that's my meal. Because tuna fish, really, were it not for the amount of mercury in it, I mean, it really is like it is like the perfect food. I mean, it's got the perfect balance of everything in it, plus it's good, and it's, you know, and it's cheap, and it's whatever. So I'll just go on streaks where I do nothing but have that, but then I'll binge every now and again, where I'll take a weekend, and it's just nothing but like powdered cheese packets and, you know, and like onion rings or something, like forever. But I eat 2 meals a day, and I always have. I mean, I've never really... There's that jazz they always say to you about, like, breakfast is the most important meal of the day, which is a thing that they just say. There's no logic to that at all when they say breakfast is the most important meal of the day. I dispute that that's a thing that's true because it's like your body doesn't know when breakfast is.
No, I mean, that's usually based on people eating dinner around 6 o'clock in the evening and then not eating anything else and then sleeping for like 8 hours.
Right.
And then morning coming and it's like been, you know, it's been 10, 12 hours since they've eaten. So, you know, that's the reason. But you stay up until like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, you snack, and then you get it. And it's like you're doing basically the same thing by having your breakfast at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
You figure if the average person eats every 8 or 9 hours, your body doesn't know which one of those meals is like first. It's not like it, you know. That's an arbitrary starting point. I think they said it in school just because they wanted you to like fill yourself full of carbs before you came, so you wouldn't be like a little bastard when you're sitting in class. I think they wanted you loaded up with food so you would just sit there and be in a coma during math.
And people's bodies are surprisingly unique. I mean, there's a lot of talk about like having to have certain meals at certain times and needing to eat, you know, every so many hours and, you know, the amount of calories and the amount of carbohydrates and that sort of thing. But people's bodies, depending on, you know, their metabolism and their blood sugar and their insulin response, and there's all kinds of differences in the way people process food and their personal needs. So, you know, you found what works for you. Good
That's
for you,
saying.
Rick Emerson.
Look, some of us have to blaze our own trail, Don.
I'm just living on whiskey and cookies myself, so.
Where did you get the whiskey from? Like I have to ask, as though I don't know.
Oh, it's from the Fun Employment Radio Stash.
Shelf of whiskey.
And I actually have, it's almost empty, that bottle. And the only reason I felt okay with taking a shot of it is that I have a bottle of that exact same whiskey at home, so I can bring some in tomorrow and replace what I just drank.
Excellent. Never mind. I was going to say that I have a bottle of whiskey, too, but mine's got a scorpion inside
That's
of it.
True.
So maybe I could just, I'll put it in something else, perhaps.
Which is, in its way, is kind of a metaphor for something.
I guess. Somebody says, what about secret aardvark on that McRib? Here's the thing about that secret aardvark is that there
it's
was
good
a time.
It's almost anything.
And there was actually a time when I was kind of carrying it around with me. The thing about secret aardvark is you don't have to refrigerate it. You can keep it at room temperature. And so I actually would just keep it, like, in the glove box of my car. And then if I was, you know, going to be somewhere, you know, where I, you know, if I was going to be ordering food and take it, if it was going to be a little bit bland, then, you know, right there in the, you know, into whatever it was I had. But then I realized that just made me look, like somebody who, like your grandmother who was always carrying around like a little paper cup so she could take her prescription medicine with her or something. It looked like I was starting to carry my house around in my vehicle.
You should know, though, when you're going to be eating the hot sauce, though, because my delightful husband brought me a sandwich from Big Ass Sandwiches a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, oh, what is it? He's, oh, it's a turkey sandwich. That's how good, turkey sandwich. And I take a bite of it and I'm eating the first bite, and he goes, oh yeah, and there's a secret aardvark on there. And I was like, okay, that's good. And then he goes, as it's starting to heat up, he goes, they put kind of a lot on.
Yeah.
He says, I was like, ah!
Yeah.
Yeah, because first I wasn't expecting hot sauce on a turkey sandwich, and then, even though it was delicious, a little heavy. So it took me by surprise.
We have to quit talking about food, officially. We have to be done with that.
Are we done with talking about food?
For at least 30 seconds, like now. It is the Rick Emerson Program, so we'll get into the news here in just a second. We got your Clown Watch, your Corpse Watch, your Geek Watch, your Dexter, your Top 5, and your so forth. And actually, that's a lie. I'm going to finish it with this one thing, because you mentioned, so you were good enough to bring in this chocolate Chex Mix today. So these are the chocolate Chex Mix alias.
Chocolate peanut butter Chex Mix.
Also known as Muddy Buddies, which many of you may have made, like, in the, you know, like your family may have made, or like it was a thing that Cub Scouts seemed to make a lot for whatever reason, because there was Chex Mix, which I think came out of the 60s. I think that was a thing that came out of like the sort of like California dip era, where they would put it on the back of your Chex cereal box. And then later in the 70s, they augmented that by on the back of the Chex cereal, there'd be like a little cutout card, and it was like how to make Muddy Buddies. And it was like this sort of, you know, yet another use for your Chex Mix. Because the Chex people figured out early on that they were only going to get so far selling that as just like a breakfast cereal. Because if you're competing with like sugared cereals and health cereals and whatever, you got to find an alternate use for it.
Surely I'm not the only one that is slightly enraged, though, by the way this is extrapolated out. It's like every time I see, you know, Rice Krispies squares, you know, in a wrapper already made, it just kind of makes me a little bit angry, because the whole point of Rice Krispies squares was for them to get you to buy Rice Krispies to make the Rice Krispies squares.
You're enraged on whose behalf?
On just
on
everyone.
Behalf of Kellogg's?
No, us as consumers. Because it's like with the Chex Mix. It's like, hey, here's this recipe, something to do with Chex, so you'll buy more Chex. And then it's like, since you're such lazy...
It's less work for you,
a-holes,
though.
A-holes.
Well, that's clearly true. But that's but that obviously is the case, as evidenced by the fact that... You didn't make me Muddy Buddies. You bought them.
I don't know.
You want to blame someone? Blame thyself, Don Taylor. I'm just saying, like, you have proven their thesis correct by buying these, is
but
my point.
I bought them because of our ongoing interest, though,
in the expansion of products.
The expansion of General Mills chocolate peanut butter lacquering project they're doing to their other foods.
So there's these Muddy Buddies. Now, it's interesting that you have these because last night I was stopping at the Ye Olde Plaid Pantry on the way home after yesterday's unpleasantness with the Viso, you know, where I came in and it was gone or whatever. I was like, that's not going to happen to me again. I'm going to be prepared. So now I've got like a can of emergency Viso, and I'm not going to tell anybody where it is. But ever since seeing Papillon, I keep it in a strange place.
It's not in the little fridge in the corner?
It is.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, so I stopped at the Plaid Pantry, and I was and I've been talking to Greg about the you know, the pretzel M&Ms. And so I'm like, well, I wonder if they have those here. And so I went back to the M&M section, and not only do they have the pretzel M&Ms, which are just sublime, by the way. I mean, they really are just, they're quite something.
I'll have to take your word for that.
They have the, yes, you will. They have the pretzel M&Ms, but at some point, I don't know what is going on with this culture of ours, and I'm not complaining, but I'm just saying there's a quickening, as Art Bell would say, happening with foods where, did you ever read that book, The 100th Monkey?
I don't.
The 100th Monkey was,
sure.
It was a book that was, it was some hippie nonsense about nuclear disarmament. But the premise of the book was, it was the thing about the collective consciousness and about how if there was a, the book posited that if there was a critical mass of people with a belief or a bit of knowledge, that it would somehow then sort of jump to the rest of the world. That, like, you know, if enough people had it in one place, then suddenly the, it was a sort of viral thought.
Okay.
And the example they gave, which sounds like one of those things that is, in retrospect, is probably made up. The example they gave was like capuchin monkeys. Is that what they're called? But monkeys in like South America or something. They would eat sweet potatoes, but they came out of the ground and they were always covered in dirt. And they would eat the dirt along with the potatoes. But then at one point, like some monkey somewhere, scientists noted that this one like little tribe of monkeys, they began washing their potatoes in the river. And then more and more monkeys in that area began washing. It was a learned behavior. But then suddenly, like on another continent, those monkeys began doing it too. And they were like, well, how can this happen? How can it possibly? And they were, you know, is this an example of the shared, of the Jungian consciousness? And, you know, so but there's something happening like that with snack food. And that sounds dumb, except when you think that, like, we had regular Pringles, you know, of, like, no other flavor, like, for 25 years. There was no other flavor of Pringles. And then in, like, 6 months' time, like, about 2 years ago, suddenly we had 75 different flavors of Pringles, including Pringles that tasted like non-chip products, like, you know, pizza.
I think that's less, though, a result of a Jungian consciousness thing, as it is of the immense strides we've made just in the last 5 years of, like, the technology of smell and taste in lab-created.
So you think the Chex Mix people wanted to do this all along, they just weren't able to?
Yeah, I think that there are companies that, well, I know, there are companies that have labs and they manufacture artificial flavors.
Right.
And then they have marketing departments that go to, like, General Mills and to the big concerns, and they sell them those artificial flavors. And part of their marketing is to work with their A&R departments to figure out how they can make things with them.
Right. And I get that, but do you think that, like, it's just that the technology, everybody kind of got the technology at once?
Pretty well, I imagine there's only so many real high-end companies that are doing this kind of research. But the thing is that the when we were growing up, artificial flavors were kind of awful.
But that's right, they were terrible. No, that's a good point.
You sort of took it on faith that was grape flavor or watermelon flavor, and they were horrible. But somewhere around the time that they started making Jelly Bellies, and Jelly Bellies were only possible because of strides that had been made in artificial flavoring techniques. And so there have been so many advances in the way they combine chemicals and stuff to make artificial flavors, that there are more and more really realistic artificial flavors available.
That does make sense.
For them to sell to these companies that manufacture food.
No, that does make total sense. Okay, I could see that. And so then the line extension, as they call it, then it just sort of explodes. Because so we have the you know, the Pringles that taste like whatever.
The cheeseburger,
we have the
Doritos.
We have now the you know, the Bugles that have all the different, you know, infused with the different flavors and whatever.
We had the ham.
The ham chips.
Ripples or whatever they were.
Ham ruffles. And then, you know, listener Mark is saying that, you know, that he said, like, I grew up in Britain, and we were the first ones to have the crisps that were flavored. He said, so the British, you know, chemical companies are to blame. So I'm at Plaid Pantry yesterday, and I was thinking, well, maybe they have these pretzel M&Ms. And I go over, not only do they have the pretzel M&Ms, there's the cherry cordial M&Ms, which you brought in.
Mm-hmm.
There are dark chocolate M&Ms, and I like me some dark chocolate. There are, dark chocolate M&Ms, mint M&Ms, which I don't really, it seems like a thing I don't want.
There are now coconut M&Ms.
Coconut M&Ms.
And they are horrible.
I tried some.
Just horrible.
Here's the thing, I bought a bag of those. They had the coconut M&Ms as well. That was the last one I was going to come up with in the white bag. So last night I bought the coconut M&Ms, and I bought two packets of pretzel M&Ms, thinking, I will go home, I will consume
one of these packets of pretzel M&Ms, and then I'll bring the rest in tomorrow. And so between that,
that was
time,
a nice thought.
And yeah, and then this morning at around 10 o'clock when I was sitting at home going, these are really good. I wonder what would happen if I mixed these with coconut. So I was at home doing, just prepping some of the new stuff and whatever this morning and just shoveling those all away. And that is why I'm here sans M&Ms, because I did eat, I swear to Christ, to your question of whether I eat crap or whether I eat healthily, and I said that I sort of binge and purge, I did in fact have three bags of M&Ms essentially back to back.
That's nice.
I am a revolting human being, and I fill myself with shame. Final observation, then we'll start the news. He says, this guy says, they increased their profit margin by prepackaging Rice Krispie squares. Said, that is the only way. Said, because they're already making so much money on Rice Krispies, because how much could it possibly make to manufacture Rice Krispies? He says, this is the only way to increase their profit. Their goal is accomplished. He said, also, don't forget the chemicals put into bottles by the folks at Jones Soda. That's another good example of that, where they get like the turkey gravy, you know, soda or whatever the hell. All right. All right. Hey, you crazy kids. At the news desk, it's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Does marriage matter in the 21st century, Rick Emerson?
Wait. Yes. Yes, it does, immensely.
Not as much as it used to.
Damn.
According to a new study by Time and the Pew polling group. After polling 2,691 adults, Pew found that while 4 out of 10 Americans under 30 say that marriage is becoming obsolete, only 5% of people in that age range don't want to get married. The study also found that fewer couples are getting married than they were in previous decades, and that the decline maps fairly neatly onto class differences.
Well, they're getting married later, too. The average age of marriage for a woman, I think, now is 29, whereas it used to be like, you know, 12 or something.
As of 2008, college grads are more likely to get married than people with high school diplomas. And high school grads...
That surprises me.
And high school graduates are 16% more likely than their peers to get married. As Time put it, the richer and more educated you are, the more likely you are to marry or to be married. Or conversely, if you're married, you're more likely to be well off. The poll also showed a tilt toward liberal attitudes on social issues. A minority of people are likely to disapprove of gay or unmarried couples raising children, or of interracial couples getting married or unmarried people living together.
It seems strange that the more educated you are, and the better off you are, the more likely you are to get married. That seems to defy logic. It would almost have to be the other way, that you get married and so therefore you're making more money.
I don't know. I think shacking up has always been common among the working classes. But also, if you're educated, if you're a college graduate and that sort of thing, that means your friends probably are as well, which means they're probably employed and can afford to buy you stuff. So that you get married, so you get like gifts.
Oh, that's true. So I guess if you're, you know, there's no point in registering if it has to be at the Cracker Barrel.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, we're registered at the Walmart.
No, I can see that. All right.
Although my husband and I did register at Target.
I don't even know what that means, because, you know, Lauren and I didn't do anything like that. We didn't register anywhere. We just showed up and we're like, hey, we're married. And then I went back to work. And, you know, so I don't even know how – I wouldn't know how you register. You just go in and go like, I need to register.
Yes. And then they hand you – if you go to someplace like – we did it at Target. We did it at Pottery Barn. And what they do is then they hand you a scanner gun – like they used
and
to,
you
like,
go through the like, store and just like scan things.
You scan the barcodes on things you want, and it goes into a database. And then if people are coming to your wedding, they can look on there and say, "Hey, they want these particular towels."
All right, don't ever tell my wife that, because then she'll be like embittered that we didn't get to do that or whatever.
We did register for a PlayStation, but no one bought it for
us. Is this
but
like
one person did get us Legos that
like
we registered
an
for?
Amazon wish list, basically.
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Here's a list of stuff to get me. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. And then when people, like, people often want to just get you stuff that you already want, so they know that you want. It, of course, this all goes back to when people got married and they were really young, and they needed stuff to set up house together.
Maybe that's the thing. Like, Lauren and I have been living together for, like, 10 years or something, you know, when we, you know, I guess maybe not 10, maybe 7, when we got married. So it's like, you know, anything we had, it was stuff we already needed, and anything we needed, we already bought.
Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, Patrick and I didn't really need. I already owned a house and I had like dishes and things. But it was sort of like, you know, we have all the wine glasses we will never need. for as long as we live.
You know, what, there's a thing with that, too, because I can tell you the finest drinking glasses that I've ever had, owned in my life. And I think a drinking glass that you – I think you commented on this at one point because I think I had it in the kitchen. I brought it here. Some of our drinking glasses actually reside here because I will sort of, you know, bring them from home as I am. I do this thing of leaving the house with the beverage in a glass, then whatever. And those are from Siegfried. And he did get those. When we got married, he gave us. He's like, here you go. I brought you some things to drink beer from. And it was just, and they're some of the finest glasses I have ever owned in my life. So that really did pay off for us in that one regard.
Someone, when we got married, somebody bought us a set of four, I think, Waterford Crystal iced tea glasses that have never been used because they're a weird size and they're not anything that I really need. And I never think about them because they're like a weird size and they're in the cabinet so they don't get broken. And every once in a while I'll clean something out and I'll go, oh yeah.
These. We own these.
And there's something, honestly, I would have taken back in exchange for something else, but they didn't put like a card in the gift, so we never figured out who it was from.
Well, let me ask you this. What is the deal with Waterford Crystal? Is that, I mean, is it just the name, or is there some, is there something that makes that exemplary?
I have no idea. It does come from Waterford, England, and it's,
but I mean, it's
Ireland,
like,
is it
different in some way? I mean, I'm assuming it isn't.
I guess there's some kind of quality to it that makes it more expensive. I have no idea.
All right. I figured that would be the case. All right. Here is Don Taylor.
We have a Geek Watch.
Here's your Geek Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
This high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember, you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here's your Geek Watch for Thursday.
A 17-year-old from Queens has turned the fervor for the unreleased white iPhone 4 into a six-figure business, making enough money to send himself to college so long as he stays out of trouble with the law.
I saw this headline, but I didn't know. I never bothered to read the article because I didn't know it was about the white iPhone.
Well, yeah, and you know, I guess you know the thing about the white iPhone, right?
They keep teasing it, but they haven't ever put it on sale because Apple can't get it right somehow.
Right, because because the
keeps getting scratched or bent or
well, and also there's also saying there's some problems with the camera because. The translucence of the white body lets too much light in. So when
oh, that's interesting.
So it's screwing up using the camera.
That's weird. Yeah, so it's a thing that they've announced the release date for several times, and then every time the release date comes and goes and there's no white iPhone.
Right.
Which is, by the way, that is like Apple in a nutshell, that I mean, that there's such huge demand for like a shade of the product. I mean, you know, which is a thing you think you wouldn't care about, but Apple.
Well, the 17-year-old Faye Lam, who is a high school senior and a gadget nerd, speaks fluent Chinese and somehow, whether through his family or whoever, had a connection with Apple's overseas supplier, Foxconn. He says, I knew a guy from years back that had somewhat of a relationship with the folks there, he told the Observer newspaper. So he was able to buy iPhone 4 parts. He started a site, whiteiphone4now.com. and sells conversion kits that turn regular iPhone 4s into white iPhones.
Oh, that's interesting. So he's not actually selling it as an iPhone because they would probably sue him into oblivion for that. It just lets you modify
right. The
iPhone, which, despite what Steve Jobs would claim, does belong to you once you buy it, and you can kind of do what you want with it.
Yeah, during the first month or so, he sold only one or two parts a day, and because he was getting the pieces himself, repacked and shipped them, and so he actually lost some money on it. But he quickly figured out how to have the parts shipped direct, and his venture was noticed by major sites like TechCrunch, CNET, and CNN. And so they wrote about it, people went to his website, and he's now sold more than $130,000 worth of parts since August.
Is there a photo of what it looks like? Is there a because I mean
not in this story, but probably.
I'm just going to Google white. I mean, it sounds dumb to say, like, what does it look like? But I mean,
let me go to his site, White iPhone 4 now.
White iPhone. Here we go. I'm sorry. No, this is wrong. All right.
Well, anyway, he did receive a letter from a private investigator who accused him of selling stolen goods.
Whatever.
Which he says, I'm 100% sure is not the case. There's some kind of anti-counterfeit trademark firm, which sounds ridiculous, similar to what Apple's bringing up to remove white iPhone 4 listings on eBay. I don't know how this legal stuff works, he says. Back in September, a woman in Kansas was convicted of selling stolen goods on eBay, who faces 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine.
Oh, but he's not selling something. He's not claiming to sell an iPhone.
He's not.
He's selling – is it whiteiphonenow.com?
Whiteiphone4now.
Okay, let's see. Oh, here we go. All right, let me look. Because he's not saying, like, I'm going to sell you an iPhone. He's going to say, he's basically saying, I'll sell you some paint to spray onto your phone. I mean, it's not paint, but I mean, that's right. It's like, I'll sell you something to spray. Yeah. Like, if you wanted
he's selling you a car
of a different color.
Yeah, basically, a new case for your guts, I think.
Okay,
you know?
I'm looking at the phone now. How much does it say how much it costs to buy it there? How much would you imagine it costs to buy the conversion kit?
$40.
$279.
Yeah, okay. Well,
or you can just buy the front for $170.
He is taking advantage of people being, you know, idiots.
Yeah. I mean, let's have no illusions about that. That is idiocy. I mean, I guess it's cool looking, but I got to tell you, I mean, this is just my opinion, and obviously the numbers would indicate that even if I'm not in the minority, that there's people who disagree with me. I got to tell you, I'm looking at the white iPhone 4 right now, and it's like mine looks cooler.
Yeah.
The black looks way – maybe, but that's a me thing.
The black and silver looks way sleeker and cooler.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I went with the – that's why I didn't – you know, because they give you that thing when you get the iPhone 4, like the free bumper or the whatever, the case. And that's – and I ordered it because it's free. Why not? That way I have it around. But it's I don't use it because the thing is just so cool looking. It's like, why would I ever want to, you know?
Yeah. My friend Eric, I have the 3GS. And my friend Eric said, well, now you're going to have to get a case for it. And I was like – but I like the way it looks, and I like the way it feels. And, you know, as long as I'm not throwing it around, I mean, you know, I've got the invisible shield on it, so it's not scratching up. I mean, you know.
This is the only thing I'll say, and then I have to – and that you have to – I have to forcibly keep myself – I will just make this one comment. Mm-hmm. And I say only because it's true and also because – and because whoever you are and whatever side of the phone equation aisle you're on, this will – this is a Rorschach comment that will prove whatever you think, you know, whatever you believe to be true, this will just underscore that. Occasionally, even now, like literally months after the fact, I occasionally just take my iPhone out and I just stare at it for a while. So there you go.
I actually,
whatever you think of me, that just proves it.
I, you know, the 3GS, it's the older, you know, body, but it's got the curved back of it. So it just feels really good in my hand.
Yes, it does.
I grab my wallet,
is
my keys
heavy?
To go out. I wouldn't say it's substantial.
See, mine is heavier than it looked, but I like that.
Yeah.
Because I think also, and that regardless of the phone, like it would just buying something for, you know, however many $100s, and if it just feels light, you're like, I've been gypped. I bet they just put pieces of lead or something in there so that it feels like you got $500 worth of phone.
Yeah, probably.
All right.
You want to feel like you've got all of that computing power.
Seriously.
In your hand.
Let's see. Somebody says, white causes light leaking. The kit includes a screen, the front bezel, the backside, the touchscreen processor. By the way, he said, I now have an iPhone 4, 32 gig, which I got for $50 off from AT&T because it was refurbished. So there you go. Let's see. So I'm looking at this photo of this right here. Well, you know, but this is America in a nutshell. There's a need. It's not being met by somebody else. You meet that need, and now you get to go to college, and somebody else paid for it. So good for you. All right. Well, there's by the way, if you want to see that is white iPhone 4, numeral 4, white iPhone 4 now. White iPhone 4 now, delivered within 3 to 7 business days. So all right, good for that guy. All right. Is that the end of the Geek Watch?
It is indeed.
I had something else I was going to say. Let's see. Geek Watch. Something about a film release. Well, hey, we talked about the Incredible Hulk thing yesterday.
Yeah.
That's what's his name? That's David Icke or whatever.
Yeah, and Guillermo del Toro.
Guillermo del Toro. Is that actually happening or are they just talking about it? Was it a rumor?
Apparently they've cut a deal, but that doesn't mean it'll necessarily happen. Something could go wrong.
Did you see that they're remaking The Wizard of Oz?
Yes.
What's that about?
That's about Robert Zemeckis trying to destroy all of our childhood dreams.
Well done, sir. All right. And this is all true. There you go. That's your Geek Watch for Thursday.
By Grapthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Has Weird Al Yankovic recorded and released an iPhone song? It seems like he really ought to.
I don't know.
Seems like it seems wrong somehow that he hasn't done a song about Apple or about Android or an Android versus Apple song. It seems like that's a thing that he ought to be on that right now. I mean, maybe he has, but that's money in the bank for him.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do one more here, and we'll take a break.
We have news from your homeland, courtesy of alert listener Melissa.
My homeland of Kennewick?
Mm.
Okay.
After catching a radioactive rabbit just north of Richland, Washington, Hanford workers are now on the hunt for a radioactive mouse. Radioactive mouse droppings have been found in the same area where radioactive rabbit droppings were found earlier this month. About 60 mouse traps have been set, but the two mice caught so far have not been contaminated. The Washington State Department of Health is monitoring the situation, but does not believe there is a danger to the public, said Earl Fordham, the department's regional director of the Office of Radiation Protection. No contaminated droppings have been found near areas that are open to the public. When Hanford workers began finding radioactive rabbit droppings, they checked 18 rabbits that were trapped or shot with pellet guns. Just one was contaminated, and it was killed and disposed of as radioactive waste. No more rabbits have been seen or caught in the area where the droppings were found. All were near the 327 building, where hot cells were pulled out and demolition began on the structure about 6 weeks ago. During the years that plutonium was produced at Hanford for the nation's nuclear weapons program, workers stood outside of the hot cells and remotely operated equipment to perform tests on radioactive material. One theory is that the rabbit might have sipped water in the building's basement that was sprayed during demolition to suppress dust. Mice and rabbits.
If you listen really carefully, you can hear the sound of my thyroid exploding. That's awesome.
A guy from the EPA says it's not a surprise, by the way, that contaminated animal materials are found. In 2009, there were 33 cases of contaminated animal material found on the 586-square-mile nuclear reservation site. The radioactive animal materials more commonly are found closer to the center of the site.
Yes, it's an astonishing revelation. All right, so there's this study that came out, I don't know, it was like in 75 or 74 or something like that, where back, I think, before the internet, when the government, if they felt like they absolutely had to release information, like they were legally compelled to do so, they would just dump it. Well, you worked in the newspaper business.
Yeah.
They would just dump it like, you know, on a holiday or on a Friday or something. So it was out of the news cycle by the time everybody went back to, you know, to work on Monday, so nobody would read this. But they were revealing that children at one point just drank milk that was laced with strontium-90 because it came from cows that were grazing on – I mean, it's like a house that Jack built thing. The cows that were grazing on radioactive grass that was growing in radioactive dirt, and the dirt was radioactive because they just had, like, iodine and plutonium-laced water that they would just occasionally just, you know, what should we do with it? I don't know. Dump it out back, Zeke. You know, and then it just ends up in your kid's school milk. That's awesome. All right. Well, let's do this. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program still to come. We got your clown watch, also corpse watch on the way. We'll talk a little bit about Dexter, and when I'll open the Chex Mix. And so, how was the whiskey, by the way?
Oh, it was delicious.
What brand is that?
It's Pendleton.
Pendleton, is that a decent brand of whiskey?
It is. It's a very nice blended Canadian whiskey, but you'd think blended whiskey, But no, Pendleton is really good.
Now, is blended whiskey, is that when they take just a whole bunch of different batches and they just put it together into a single bottle?
Pretty much, yeah, except that, you know, when they get expensive, they actually think about what it is they're doing. But it generally tends to be smoother. It's like, think like Canadian Club. It's sweet and it's very smooth. I actually first had this, Patrick Allen Coleman, the former food critic for the Portland Mercury, was on our show, Ham-Fisted Radio, and he brought some along. And gave me a bottle, and it's very delicious. It's kind of sweet. It's kind of caramely. It's very smooth. It's a really, really good whiskey.
It's like God invented it because he wanted you to be happy.
Pretty much, yeah. It's nice stuff.
We come back. Speaking of Ham-Fisted Radio, when we come back, we'll talk about the yesterday's episode of Ham-Fisted Radio and the resolution of the whole issue of the city dinging the pirate guys for this grass in the park.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Indeed. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program here at the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us today. By the way, I was saying that that thing earlier about the Mexican Coca-Cola, and now people are just they're sending me lists of places where you can actually get that. There are some stores, incidentally, that sell it.
You can get it at Big Ass Sandwiches.
Is that true?
Yeah.
It's so what is it? Is it just because corn syrup is cheaper? Is that why they don't?
Yeah.
Is that the deal? Because I would think, that doesn't make any sense. You would figure that cane sugar or whatever the natural whatever, you figure that'd be cheaper because it's just like sitting around on the earth, like it's just there, you know, like it just comes out of the dirt, as opposed to corn syrup, which you got to make.
Well, you still have to grow the sugar cane.
I guess that's true. Hey, whenever you talk about...
It doesn't come from a mine.
I wish there was a sugar mine somewhere. How great would that be? of course, then there are... Ant overlords would send us to work there.
Yeah.
When you talk about sugarcane, do you hear the C&H jingle in your head?
Oh, yeah. And I see the little... Well, actually...
The happy natives chopping down the...
I tend to actually conflate that with the Hawaiian punch guy.
Really?
So, like, yeah. So I see, like, sugarcane, and then I think because what happens is then my brain jumps to, like, workers in the field, and then they're wearing that hat like the Hawaiian punch guy wears.
The Hawaiian punch guy didn't wear a hat.
Yeah, he does.
No, he has the big crazy red hair.
No, the Hawaiian Punch guy wears one of the straw hats, like Calypso guys wear.
Like Calypso guys wear?
Yeah.
Like the Uncola man? No, that was a linen suit. I don't know what I'm talking about. I thought the Hawaiian Punch guy just had red crazy hair like a troll doll.
I don't know who you're thinking of. No, that's not his hair, that's his hat.
Let me see.
He's wearing a hat. It's one of those Calypso guy hats.
I never knew that was... Okay, that's the same picture, but I never knew that was a hat.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he just had, like, Coolio hair.
No.
I mean, you can see how I'd make that mistake.
I can see how you would make
Look,
that error.
Here
yes.
in Kennewick, we didn't really have access to Calypso culture as such, so I'm just, you know... Well, in any event, I don't even know where I was going with that. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Let me tell you about Castalia language. Well, you know, here's the thing. You learn to speak Spanish, then you can inquire when you are perhaps in Mexico or in another Spanish-speaking land. You can say, pardon me, sir, do you have the good Coca-Cola that has the cane sugar in it and not corn syrup? I do not wish to drink the... I don't wish to drink the unholy Coca-Cola of a, of an imperialist Yankee country. I wish to have the... And as I said, it comes in the smaller bottle, too, which is good, because then you can delude yourself into thinking that it's, you know, that it's healthy. You have the smaller Coca-Cola.
They also have much more delicious Orange Crush in Mexico, by the way.
Well, that must just be... But it must be across the board, because they just eschew corn syrup, which has a sort of weird bitterness to it after a while.
It's also... There's also a different orange kind of a flavor that they use for the orange in the Orange Crush, and it's far more delicious.
And I tell you this, I don't really drink a lot of soda at this point in my life. When I was a younger man, I would drink a Strawberry Crush. For some reason, I went through a whole phase with that, which is kind of a girly drink, but it's a thing I consumed a lot of. And I got to tell you, I don't really...
That sounded excessive.
Yeah, I don't drink it now, and I tried one a couple years ago, and it was way, way too sweet. But can we all agree that Crush is a great name for a soda?
Yeah.
And Strawberry Crush, like, I want it from a band called Strawberry Crush, you know, that just plays, like, power pop hits from the 60s. I mean, how perfect would that be, right?
It would be.
All right. Well, in any event, this is like the third time I've tried to start the Castalia thing, and I just can't. Christ. I'm sorry, Cristo. Well, if you're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program and you're saying to yourself, I cannot believe that they spent like 45 minutes talking about French fries. You know, we do that for several reasons. A, because we try to amuse the people. And B, because we're masters of our own destiny here. And that is, largely because of the support of y'all and our fine business partners, such as Castalia Language Center. Clara Grebel, who is a native Spanish speaker from Argentina, who now lives in Portland, and she operates Castalia Language Center in downtown Portland. A longtime listener of the show and a proud sponsor of the Emerson News Network. So when you hear the show and you say, hey, who makes it possible? It's Castalia Language Center. So you find yourself wanting to learn Spanish as a second or a third language, or maybe you had some Spanish education when you were growing up and you didn't really retain it the way you thought you would, or the way that you wish you had, and you want to be able to speak Spanish. You want to be able to speak it conversationally, colloquially. Maybe you have friends who speak Spanish. You're going to be traveling. You're going to be going to Spain, something like that. You want to be able to communicate without having to pull out like an index card that shows you like sitting on a toilet and like pointing for the card to you and the card to you back and forth again.
Saying, baño, very sadly.
And then shrugging and then pointing at your crotch. Because that could be interpreted in many ways,
yeah.
I imagine. Lots of which...
Especially if you're in an airport men's room or
Seriously,
something.
Seriously, that's... I think the constable's going to want to speaks with you about that. So you go to portlandspanish.com. That's what you do. You go to the website portlandspanish.com. You find out more about Castalia Language Center, where you're going to be putting a class of no more than seven of your compatriots. Means it's going to be more than no more than eight people. So you're going to be able to learn in a near individualized way. So you're going to learn the same rate and the same way as everybody else there. And if you had some Spanish education to build on, or if you got none, they're going to have something for you. They're going to have a class that is suited to your needs and to your schedule as well. Please, whatever the eventuality of that, please tell them that you heard about it here at the Emerson News Network, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Castalia Language Center, PortlandSpanish.com, PortlandSpanish.com.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Look, if you had one shot to sit on your lazy butt and watch all the TV you ever wanted until your brain turned to mush, would you go for it or just let it slip?
Yo.
Remote is ready, eyes wide, palms are sweaty. The Flintstones on the TV already, Wilma and Betty. No virgin, the channel surfing, and I'm HD ready. So I flip, garbage is all I'm getting. The Simon Cowell, who folks want to disembowel. He opens his mouth, always says something foul. They're dying, wow, wannabes are crying now. He votes them out, time to throw in the towel. Shows based on reality, oh, the humanity, oh. Aussie's family show loves profanity. Whoa, the insanity. Oh, dogs that crap and pee. Home of depravity. No, they live happily. Yo, plus the Ali G show and celebrity mole. Oh, and there's Anna Nicole. She's scaring me. Look, mono cavities. Oh, it's a station break. Better go out to the kitchen and microwave something.
You're gonna lose your mind watching TV. They told me, they told me, but I'm still tuning every show. My cable gets C-SPAN TV, Land and HBO. The Travel Channel, Discovery, and Lifetime. You're gonna lose your mind watching TV. They told me, cajoled me, turn off those music videos. I'm gonna watch C-SPAN TV, Land and HBO, the History Channel, and QVC, and Lifetime.
My butt is aching as I watch NASCAR racing. That show about undertaking Larry King to 24 to Law and Order. The Weather Channel's boring, like 60 Minutes, Ancient Reporters. Next up on E! True Hollywood Story, the rise and decline of 12 actors named Corey. Shows for next fall, they already been naming. CSI Boise and Touched by an Uncle both sound pretty lame. So does everybody tolerates Raymond. And King of Queens jumped the shark the first minute. I can't believe Richard Simmons ain't in it. I move right under eight simple rules for dating my teenage daughter. Then I bet I watch The Bachelorette, followed by Welcome Back, Carter, and the Muppet Show, where they go when I'm
out. You're gonna lose your mind watching TV. They told me, they told me, but I'm still tuning every show. My cable gets C-SPAN TV, Land and HBO, the Disney Channel and A&E and Lifetime. You're gonna lose your mind watching TV. They told me, cajoled me, but I'm at least I could grow. I'm looking at C-SPAN TV, the Playboy Channel and Court TV and Lifetime.
Never missed Melrose Place or Lost in Space. I've seen each amazing race and without a trace. But I only watched Will and Grace one time, one day. Wish I hadn't, cause gay. Oh, and Fear Factor watched maybe a half hour. After that, felt like I needed a long shower. Network execs with naked ambitions. Next week on Fox, watch Lions Eat Christians. Like to tie up those programming planners. Make them watch all of that junk till their heads explode just like scanners. Leech covered grub-eating fools on Survivor. Look, there's James Lipton discussing the oeuvre of Mr. Rob Schneider. And there's Gilligan and SpongeBob Plus. There's MacGyver and Jay Leno has got Madonna. Hey, there's Luke Perry on a special all-pig Latin episode of Drew Carey. Wanna turn on E.T.? Cause I'm a gossip freak. And I gotta know who J-Lo is marrying this week. A 30-second spot, then we come back to Are You Hot? I was planning on recording The Sopranos. I forgot. I love shows with or without a plot. I'll stare till my legs are numb, my eyes bloodshot, because I only have got one brain to rot. I'm gonna spend my life watching television a lot.
You're gonna lose your mind watching TV. They told me, they told me, but I still tune in every show. My cable gets C-SPAN TV, Land and HBO, Sci-Fi Channel and AMC and Lifetime. You're gonna
lose your mind watching TV. They told me, cajoled me, turn off that Oprah Winfrey show. I got it on C-SPAN TV.
You can watch anything you want to, man.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503. 505-6964. Hold on just one moment here. All right. Don't forget to join us tomorrow. That is Friday, when our guests will include Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be doing another installment of... You know, the problem with Viso is that if you have the really tart kind, then it's like it makes your mouth water.
Yes.
It's a whole thing.
You get kind of puckery and drooly at the same time.
Tomorrow, another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 with Big Jim Willig. The focus of tomorrow's installment will be Mr. Sam Kinison. Mm-hmm. So that is coming up tomorrow. So to come today, we got your clown watch. We got your corpse watch on the way. Ooh, and I mentioned this to you. I don't think I said it on the air. I think I mentioned this before we went on today. I found this article that just screams you. There's the six reasons why your Starbucks barista hates you.
Aww.
How long did you work at Starbucks?
About a year.
What is the first reason that comes to mind when I say a Starbucks barista might hate a customer because?
Very first top of my list is because they insist they know the temperature of their drink.
Really?
And they insist upon it.
Do you mean when they order or when they come back and they go, I requested
this? No, I mean when
they
order it.
Really?
When they say, you know, I want a double tall macchiato and I want it 120 degrees.
As though there's like a distinction there that the human tongue can even really discern.
Like they really know. It's like you want it extra hot. Just say you want it extra hot. But no, there are people who say they wanted a specific temperature, and like they think they know what that temperature is.
Right, right. To me, you know what that sort of reminds me of? That reminds me of like. Do you ever just sort of like read through? I used to do this with Willamette. I don't think that, you know, I love Willamette Week, but I think times have changed. Do you ever, like with the Willamette, you would read through those, like, there was the regular personal ads, then there was like the, what were they called? Hot Connections or whatever they were. You know, it was like the separate, like the sex ads, basically, that were in the back. You know what I'm talking about? There was like the division. So you would read through those, and I guess that's all moved to Craigslist now. But you look through personals ads for people that are just like looking for somebody to hump, and it's like the absurdly specific thing with, and this is often guys, sometimes women, but it's usually guys, the absurdly specific requirement that you know they couldn't possibly discern. No one over the age of 24 ever at all. And it's like, well, it's like guys with like a weight thing, you know, or like a measurement requirement. And you know that there's like no guy on earth that has any idea what any woman weighs or what her measurements are. Guys don't know what a cup size is.
I like the very broad but very specific age requirements that some guys will do, like looking for a woman 23 to 41.
Right. That's, I mean, like, and unless you have some weird like a very particular fetish you were trying to satisfy, there's just no. I mean, yeah, there's just no reason for that. Well, I'll just do these right now, actually, because and then we'll get to some other things. So this is from originally from the. God, I'm old. I always want to say the Seattle PI, which, by the way, is a newspaper that hasn't existed for like 15 years. It's from the Seattle Weekly. This is the Seattle Weekly has an article called Six Reasons Why Your Starbucks Barista Hates You. So I will just sort of hit these real briefly, and then we'll get to some other things. Number one, needless use of the lingo, and this is, by the way, this is written from the perspective of a barista. It's written by a barista, I guess. It's all from that perspective. Number one, needless use of the lingo. She says, "I paid barely enough to refer to a medium as a grande. You have no effing excuses to call that medium coffee a grande bold." Two, using the order as a way to showcase useless knowledge of coffee you've received from some other barista. Said, I don't want to hear about the hints of cinnamon that you can detect in the Ethiopian blend.
Right, no. Yeah.
Is that a thing that they do?
Yeah, you got the people who are like, you know, I want to order eggs. I really like it because it's a lot more caramely than the Venezuelan.
As though the barista cares, right?
Yeah,
like, that's the, you know. And don't get me wrong. Look, people might be thinking to themselves right now that I am like the guy who comes in and bitches about poor customer service. And I do. Mm-hmm. So all of these things, I mean, I'll just give a sort of a blanket statement at the beginning of this. It's like anybody else. You go and you're paying. I expect to be treated politely or whatever. That doesn't mean that you're not a dumbass customer, though.
About the first thing, though, the grande. Here's the thing that I worked at Starbucks and I worked at a place that was not Starbucks. A drink, unless another you're working at a place that has co-opted the sizing names. That is something that only exists at Starbucks.
Right.
So if you're going to Dutch Brothers or if you're coming into just a coffee house, take a moment to actually look at the menu board and realize that you are ordering a medium. You're not ordering a grande. You're not at Starbucks.
Right.
You know, on the other hand, when we were at Starbucks, I know that a lot of us tried very, very hard to do this thing of where we tried to educate the customers as to what was the best way to order for our convenience, because we had to mark the cups. And I don't think they really mark the cups anymore. I think it all just goes in the computer and it's a sticker that they just stick on the side. But we had to actually mark the cups. And so what we want is, first we wanted you to say the size, because that meant that was what size cup we had to grab to mark. So don't tell me everything and then say what size, because then I have to go back over it with you again. So say grande, so I can grab the grande cup. Then tell me, you know, double, you know, because I can check double or whatever, you know, blah, 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 blah. But when people go, I want a mocha with three shots, make that a tall. So now I have to get the tall cup. Then I have to mark mocha. And so it's like you've wasted all of our time by not just. So what we would do is you'd repeat it back to them the way you wanted them to order. Okay, so a tall triple mocha. Because you're trying to actually subconsciously get them to learn so that maybe the next time they'll say it right.
Now, I get that. Now, here's let me be the proxy for the audience, being the devil's advocate. Now, I, as they say in therapy, I hear that. What I hear is that the customer can be, you know, I do get that. Now, at the same time, though, there's part of me that wants to say, well, you know, but if you go to, like, we've all be, like, gone to a restaurant, and it's usually like some greasy spoon, where it's like there's 17 people and they're all ordering something, and there's like some Flo from Alice type who just looks at you and just memorizes it and just goes back to the kitchen and just like has it down. But I guess maybe that's easier in a way because you're dealing with a finite amount of ingredients at a coffee place, and so it's easier to get the order mixed up.
The other thing with the cup marking thing that would happen on a fairly regular basis too is somebody say, you know, I want a grande vanilla mocha with an extra shot. And they watch you grab the cup and mark it all down. And then they say, oh, and I want that iced. So then you put the cardboard cup down and you pick up a plastic cup. And then you – so say iced first so I know what kind of cup to get.
There's a lot of residual irritation going on.
Oh, it was – oh, there's so much anger working at a job like that. So much anger.
The I used to get really annoyed about the whole Starbucks lingo and the whatever. I used to be just a real dick about it. And I just – and I think I finally – because I can only be angry about so many things at once. Here's the thing about the Starbucks lingo that bugs me is that it's just – like it's just illogical. Like that's my thing. Is the Starbucks – like it just doesn't – I get the idea of branding, and I get the idea of augmenting your menu with your own lexicon. I mean, that's why McDonald's puts Mick in front of everything, you know. And it's you know, it's like it's why Carl's Jr. isn't the $6 burger like $3.99 or something.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, I get the idea that you know you're customizing your nomenclature, but it's like it. The thing about Starbucks is like it's just inaccurate. Though is the thing. It's just wrong. Like grande. Doesn't mean medium. Grande means big. Grande means large, I think, in fact. So
tall. Tall also means big, but tall in the Starbucks lexicon is smaller than grande.
So I think that was like it just my type A personality wouldn't accept that. All right, so that was number two. Using the order as a way to showcase your useless knowledge of coffee. Number three on six reasons why your Starbucks barista hates you. Don Taylor, number three is rigidly upholding inevitable service distinctions. For example, ordering a latte and asking that it be made at 170 degrees.
Yeah, there you go.
She also gives us an example, sending back a caramel macchiato because it mixed together. The latte will cool and the macchiato will mix together. Deal with it, customer.
Yeah.
Four, suggesting unique drink concoctions to me. Yes, she says, I know that a vanilla bean frap with a little bit of strawberry cream and half pump of mocha tastes like a Neapolitan. I effing work here, jackass. Your discovery is by no means new to me. And even if these mixtures weren't obvious, I still wouldn't want to hear your train of thought.
Or conversely, the people who order some insane concoction that they sell somewhere else that you've never heard of and expect you to know what it is. Like people who come in and go, I'd like a grande Milky Way. And you're like, I have no idea what that is. And then they just look at you with disdain.
Well, Pete's has it.
Well, I get it at the other place. Yeah. It's a mocha, and it has caramel in it and a shot of vanilla. And you're like, well, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know your damn candy bar drink.
Here's the
Jesus.
Here's why, and to some degree, this is Starbucks' fault. The reason why that happens, I think, is because Starbucks, more than any other food service, it's a restaurant, basically. It's more than any other restaurant that I can think of. Starbucks has done the whole thing of trying to position themselves as being like a bar. It's just they serve coffee.
Yeah. Because
it's like it's the comfortable environment. You can hang out and there's like jazzy kind of music playing and sort of dim lighting, and you can just sort of sit there and just unwind from the stress of the day, and you can order, and you can do exactly what people do at bars, which is to order a personalized drink, which says a lot about you as a human being. Like, it's not just a thing for you to get caffeine or milk. I mean, you know, but Starbucks is a whole thing, which, and I'm not knocking this, it's a genius of Starbucks that they now allow everyone to feel special by having their own secret special drink combination. But as a result, people think it's like a bar where you can order a sidecar, you know, or like a Harvey Wallbanger in any state of the union, and the guy will know it.
Yeah.
And so Starbucks, because they define the coffee shop experience, has bred this type of customer that thinks that Starbucks knows all. That's the problem. It's like Starbucks is a victim of their own marketing because people think, well, you're Starbucks. How can you not know?
How can you not know what a Heath Bar surprise
that's
is?
That's what I'm saying.
Like, I'm sorry. I don't drink drinks that taste like candy.
Let's see. Number five. Sharing information about the – this is a complaint about customers by baristas. Number five, sharing information about the progress of your so-called big project. Sure, I'll smile, I'll nod, I'll offer compliments, she says, but that doesn't mean I'm any less convinced of the inevitable failure of your novel than your estranged spouse Emma is. Dear customer, she's your wife, so she can afford to be discouragingly honest with you. I, on the other hand, must make money. If I need to brown nose, so be it, but I don't care about whatever you're headed off to do that day. That is the – and see, that's another thing, that the commonality between a Starbucks or the perceived commonality between Starbucks and bars is that people treat the barista like the bartender. We're like – and here's the thing. The bartender doesn't care about your problems either. But if you're a bartender in the 21st century by now, like, you know it comes with the gig, right?
Yeah.
If you're a bartender, it's like being a cab driver. You know that the guy is going to sit there and go, and then my girlfriend, you know, she just doesn't understand me. And the bartender goes, well, that's something, isn't it, buddy, while he's wiping down, because he just knows you have to do it.
Yeah, I will show interest in your life for the 24 seconds that we're going to be interacting before you walk away.
Because he wants a tip.
Because, you know, I'm hoping that you'll jam a dollar in the cup.
That's the thing. So, yeah. So baristas are still working through that. Let's see. And number six, quizzing me or offering me comments about corporate performance. She says, I don't give an F about the press interview just given by the CEO. I don't know or want to know about any regional expansion plans. I am a bag boy. I'm just handing you coffee. Memorizing the drink formulas is enough of a waste of my processing power. Thank you. I'm surprised that what's not on here is the customer that wants to hit on the barista, because baristas get hit on all the time. I don't think I've ever gone to a Starbucks where I didn't at some point see a guy who was just like brazenly flirting with the chick behind the counter. And I know that just sort of happens, but I mean, it seems like baristas get it to a greater extent than almost anyone.
And I don't know. It's we talked about this one day last week. If it's the fact that we were taught to be very friendly, also just that, you know, I don't know, maybe it's just the hit and run quality of it too. Men feel safe hitting on someone that they know they're only going to be interacting with for about 15 seconds. But then, you know, they'll see you again like two or three times that week, because most people come back to the same coffee place over and over again. So there begins to be this perception of a relationship, as well as the fact that, you know, we smile at you and we're friendly.
Also, here's the other thing. I think this is why I think guys hit on baristas. It's because on the one hand, it's not like you're hitting on a bartender, because that would, I think, to a lot of guys, especially, you know, business guys during the day, like, that would just seem, I think they would feel like that was kind of sleazy, like they were hitting on, you know, it was a little, you know, that they were hitting on somebody trashy. I think guys hitting on a bartender, you know, they feel like that might make them a certain kind of creepy guy, which, like, they are anyway.
Yeah.
But so they can feel like they're hitting on a barista because, you know, again, there's Miles Davis playing, so they're sophisticates. But also, they're still basically hitting on somebody who doesn't make minimum wage, but who's, you know, like an hourly employee. It's not like they're hitting on a CEO, so they can still feel superior.
Right. You feel that sense of the power of the fact that, you know, I've got a really great job, little lady.
Get me a coffee.
You know.
But
it's kind of like the stripper thing, where it's like, you know, you're sort of this potentate where this woman is dancing for your amusement. She's creating for the 5 minutes that you're in the coffee place, she is servicing you.
And yet at the same time, you can tell yourself, well, it's not like I'm hitting on a stripper, you know, or a bartender or whatever. So, all right, there you go. Let's see. My ex used to work at a coffee shop in Medford called the Cafe Diem. She would literally get marriage proposals from customers. Of course, it is Medford. So there you go. And then somebody says, there's two more here. Somebody weighs in and says, taking too long to order has got to be one of those complaints. Do customers – see, at Starbucks, it seems like it's the opposite, though, because, again, everybody's got, like, memorized, like, what their custom drink is.
Well, there's two things. There's the people who – but I mean, and comedians have made this joke about people going to McDonald's, people who walk up to the counter and then peruse the board
right.
as if they've never seen it. And the thing is, particularly if there's a line of people, step back, figure out what you want, then get in line. Don't, like stare at the board, or even worse, be on your phone while you're in line. Then when you get to the register, continue your phone call. Don't place your order. Continue your phone call while the person stands there staring at you, wanting to stab you in the eye.
I was just going to say wanting to stab you in the eye.
And then finally just go, oh, yeah, okay. And then think about it. It's like not only does the barista want to stab you in the
everyone
eye,
else.
So does everyone in line.
Oh, yeah. God damn. No, I am with you on that. And it's and the thing about, especially like a McDonald's, or I guess Starbucks is the same, they're like, you know what they have.
Yeah.
McDonald's has hamburgers. Starbucks has coffee. Pick something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
it's not that
know.
Hard, particularly if, I mean, did you just land on this planet? You've never been in one before?
You know, weird way, you know, that's why, you know, what I like going to is as much as this seems like a thing I wouldn't like, in a strange way, it is because of that experience. I enjoy going to sort of, and this is usually like a regional thing, or like you'll go to a city where they have like, you know, like where it is, it's like a one-off restaurant that is not a chain, where they have some really bizarre, quirky thing where you just have to scream out your order like a stockbroker. Ivers in Seattle is this way. Not that if anybody out there has ever gone to Ivers, and not that there's the two right next to each other. One is an upscale where you go inside and you sit down and they give you a cloth napkin. That's not the one anybody goes to. That is the thing that tourists go to. The people who are just sort of, you know, in Seattle from the Northwest, you go to the Ivers Fish Bar, which is right next door. And it's basically like a food cart with no wheels. I mean, it's like a food truck that's just stationary, more or less. But they actually have a sign saying like, here's the thing. Just make eye contact with somebody and then shout your order at them and then step back. Like, don't go up and peruse the menu. They're like, don't order your side. Just shout what you want and and we'll get it. And then when you go to pay, then you can ask for like whatever your beverage is. And like, if you want fries or if you want whatever, they're like, just look and they're like, we know when you make eye contact with us, you know, when we're looking at you, as soon as that happens, shout out whatever you want and then move. It says essentially. And it seems a little weird when you first do it. I mean, it seems when you first step up to do it, you wonder if it's a gimmick, is that their quirk? And then you realize that they've just figured out there's no time for everybody to stand in line and go, do I want cod? How many pieces? What kind of breading is that on? I don't know. Do you have like a light option? No.
Well, we were talking about delis earlier. Cantor's Deli in Los Angeles. I used to go there all the time because they just have wonderful sandwiches. And it's a great restaurant. But it's also, they have a deli counter. And they have bagels and the pastrami and the corned beef and all the regular Jewish deli things. And this is in the Fairfax District, smack in the middle of the Jewish section of Los Angeles. And so you go there and you go up to the counter. And if you're there at a busy time, they got three or four guys working the deli counter. But there's just a crowd of people. And I imagine, I've only seen it in movies. I think this is how things work, on the East Coast in New York at delis. Basically, there's no line.
No.
You are just elbowing your way up to the front. And if someone shows weakness,
you
just jump in and you go, give me 2 pounds of corned beef, and they're screwed.
Elbow them right out of the way.
And if you take too long, some old lady will just elbow you out of the way and step on your foot and give you a dirty look. I mean,
because
they're brutal.
Oh, yeah.
Just brutal.
Yeah, you got to claw your way to the front.
It's a competitive sport.
By the way, somebody has sent me, I don't know if he created this or not, but it's a stab in the eye emoticon. So, awesome. That's fantastic. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6944. The final question, somebody wants to know, and I don't actually know the answer to this. So what size, in ounces, is a venti at a Starbucks?
A venti is 20 ounces, 20. Which is where venti comes from. It's based on the word, the Italian word for 20.
Oh, I guess that makes sense. Okay. Excellent. Yeah. It is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. I should talk about Dexter here, which I will do in just a second. Did you want to give an update on your on the ringtone contest?
I do, but I wanted to share a story that someone sent me a link to, by the way, really quick, because while we're talking about people stabbing themselves in the face,
yes.
other people in the face. It's about a fellow named Victor Benavides. He was working at a construction site in Los Angeles when a nail gun misfired and shot a 3¼-inch nail through the roof of his mouth.
Wow.
It stopped less than a millimeter from his brain. He was rushed to the ER at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. Dr. Kimberly Lee, a plastic and reconstructive surgeon, was on call and said, "When I saw the picture, it was extremely, extremely shocking. I've never seen anything like it."
Is there like an X-ray or something?
Is there
a visual aid that accompanies this?
I couldn't send it because it's actually a video.
Oh, really? Okay.
But
if you send me the link, actually, I will...
I will turn this around really briefly so you can see...
Do me a favor. Send me the link to that page.
Okay.
I will screen cap just the photo part, and I'll upload it.
Okay. Anyway, they were saying it was a really tricky surgery because if the nail moved at all, he could go blind, have brain damage, or bleed to death.
Weird.
There is no tool to remove nails from someone's head and no classes in medical school that teaches doctors how to do it. So Dr. Lee ended up using a dental extractor and managed to pull the nail all out in one piece.
Wow.
He is now back on the job working at the same construction site where the accident happened.
Good for him and good for the doctor, too. That's one of those things where you can understand why doctors are paid such an absurd amount of money. Because that's a lot of stress to have. That, like, if you sneeze at the wrong moment, a guy's going to go blind.
Yeah.
And also the certainty that you will probably get sued if the guy goes blind, even though, you know, he put a nail in his head. The family is just there with a lawyer waiting for you to accidentally blind the guy.
I love stories, though, where doctors say things like, "And I'd never seen anything like this. It was crazy."
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to figure that you work your whole career for that, where a guy comes in and he's got like an entire pool cue, you know, down his gullet or something. And you just like that is the great thing about being a doctor is that you are. I mean, you're entitled, you're in fact allowed and encouraged, I think, to take photos of it. You know, like you couldn't do that in most jobs. You couldn't be like, "Oh, this guy's all gnarled up. Hold on, let's get a picture of him." But as the doctor, you can just say, like, "I'm going to need you to take off all your clothes and stand in front of this thing while I take endless photos of this awesome injury that you've got right here." You know, and then it's like, you know, and then you can publish them because it's part of education. You can put them in the medical journal.
And a listener shares with us that men hit on waitresses and baristas because they can't escape or rudely reject you.
Well, and they're dependent upon you for a tip. That's the other thing, is they got to be nice to you because otherwise you might not. They might not get the 15% or whatever. So real quickly, let me just talk about Dexter last night, and then we'll talk about your ringtone contest. So here's the thing about Dexter. So, you know, I've talked about how it's been such a chore for me to watch this show, especially because on Sunday, I mean, it's a little bit better now that there isn't like Mad Men and Eastbound and Down or whatever. But right now there's Boardwalk Empire, Walking Dead, Dexter. Is it just those three? I mean, as if that's not enough. Is there something else on Sunday right now, or is that it?
I think that's it now that Mad Men's over.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, and of course, Laura was going like, "Well, why do you have to watch it all on Sunday?" And I was like, "Oh, baby, the people, you know." But that hadn't really been true because I've been putting off watching Dexter because it's been the thing that's the least important to me. And first of all, I don't know if Julia Stiles, you know, used to be able to act, or it seems like she could act at one point. And maybe she's just not being given any direction in this, but she's terrible. She's awful in this. I had made the observation last week that all of the things I once found charming about Dexter, that they had started to turn on me and that they were all really irritating now. Like that thing they do like 100 times an episode where he's having a conversation with somebody and then there's like a lag in the conversation long enough for Dexter to go, "He doesn't know that that's the last donut he's ever going to have," you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
He just, you know. And so that has started to really bug me. But I got to tell you, last night's episode was actually not bad. I say last night was Sunday's, but I finally watched it last night. If the entire season had been more like this past Sunday's episode, it would actually be okay. Because the deal is so that Julia Stiles is basically like his sidekick. Because she was like, I don't know, kidnapped or beaten or kept in a hole or something. And so she's all traumatized or whatever. But so now they're like this weird like Pancho and Lefty tag team of murdering. They did something really interesting last night, too, where they actually showed, and I don't think they've ever done this before, they showed his entire setup of the room where he does the whole sheeting of the room with the plastic. I think they might have done it, like, really early on in the first episode or something. But they showed him, like, doing the entire room and wrapping up the thing and the guy and, you know, and they actually, at one point, he gives her a shopping list of, like, everything he needs to dispose of the body or the whatever. So that was kind of interesting. Although... You know, Dexter's—he developed like these superpowers in the last season or two, where he can just come within like a hair's breadth of being caught, but it's only because of the absurd idiocy of the Miami Police Department that they don't catch him like rolling a body down a hill into a, you know, into the river or something. Last night's episode, he actually not only kills the guy, and if anybody saw Sunday's Dexter, and I keep saying last night, but if anybody saw Sunday's Dexter, you know what I'm talking about. There's two things. A, he kills the guy in a hotel room. Like, in a, not in a motel, like a sleaze, like at a Holiday Inn or something. And not even a Holiday Inn. Like if you were to be, like, downtown at the Marriott. Because it's the, he's, like, a motivational speaker or whatever. And it's like, he's killing one of the motivational speakers, like, one of his, like, his assistants or something.
People, someone would notice him bringing in all the plastic sheeting and stuff.
And it's like, it's at the hotel where the motivational speaker is speaking. Yeah. So, again, it's not like a Fleabag motel. It's like, again, it's like you're at the, it's like you're at the, it's like you're at the Paramount or something. He's killing the guy in the hotel room on, like, the seventh floor of a plush hotel where you think people on other sides of the room would notice the guy going, you know, and then, you know.
And the sound of the saw as he's cutting him up and everything.
And again, the fact that he's bringing in, like, you know, like hundreds of square feet of sheeting. Also, this is the sort of thing that I just can't abide. Also, at one point before Dexter and Julia Stiles kill the guy, it doesn't really matter how this came to be. But somebody breaks down, they like by throwing his shoulder against, they break down and splinter the hotel room door.
No.
The door of the same hotel room. Now, leaving aside the fact that that's not nearly as easy to do as I think they make it look on television.
No.
Keep in mind, the guy, it's the guy they eventually kill. He's chasing Julia Stiles. She runs into the room, locks the door. He splinters the door and comes in. And then Dexter shows up and subdues him. And then it cuts to them wrapping him up in plastic in the same room and killing him. And I'm thinking,
well, what about the door?
That's and I'm thinking, A, did you go get a door? Did you go buy a door? Like he just, they showed the door splintering into like 100 feet, like 10 seconds ago.
And no one heard this or
and
called
that's
security
my,
or
that's,
anything?
That's my other thing. I'm like, even if you fix the door, even if it had been like the bathroom door inside, people hear things like that.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I've stayed in some nice hotels, and I can hear a guy clearing his throat in the next room.
Oh, yeah.
So
I can hear the person's porn in the next room.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
I know that it's a TV show, but I can't get with that. I can't get behind that, as William Shatner would say. So I had some other point I was going to make, but that's, you know, as I think I've said, I'm pretty much done with Dexter after the season, unless it just somehow ends on an unbelievable cliffhanger. I will say that it's now no longer just Quinn. I now root for everybody that is Dexter's enemy, because Quinn has hired Peter Weller, who looks bad, by the way.
Well,
maybe it's acting. Maybe
no, he's not been looking good the last couple of years.
Wow. He's playing like a burned out drunk of a cop, and he's living it.
The thing is, Peter Weller, even when he was like at the top of his game, was not really a good-looking man.
Yeah.
He was a weird-looking guy.
He looks like he ought to be pulling a slot machine, you know, at, like, the El Cortez in Vegas, you know, with, like, a bad... he's got, like, the Hawaiian shirt open to here, and he's, like, wrinkled and sunburnt and leathery.
Yeah.
It's really, really awful. But he's a private eye that Quinn has hunting Dexter, and it's like, I just so totally root now for everybody that is stalking Dexter to catch him. So, that's it. So, I think we got, like, two episodes left, and then, bam, we'll be done. So, end. We should do the ringtone contest thing.
Okay.
Have ye more submissions?
I do. I have a few more. Let me find those.
I will say, by the way, that it is Thursday today. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have Mr. Big Jim Willig on the show. He'll do another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Tomorrow, he'll be focusing on the life, career, legacy, and influence of Sam Kinison. But tomorrow at 11:59 p.m., that is 11:59 p.m. tomorrow, Friday the 19th, that'll be your deadline for submitting a ringtone submissions. The question is, what should be the ringtone on Dawn Taylor's phone that indicates that I am calling? And if you suggest the song she eventually uses, she'll record an outgoing message or whatever you like within some degree of non-perverse reason for your phone. So you can send that to Dawn at rickemerson.com. That is Dawn at rickemerson.com. All right, so yesterday we had suggestions up to and including, we had the Arrested Development theme, we had the Star Blazers theme, there was...
Bad Horse from Dr. Horrible.
See, I keep wanting to say Cowboy Bebop, but it's from Dr. Horrible.
Yeah.
There was the Imperial March, there was Kiss something or other. Of all of those, I have to tell you, I am most in favor of the Star Blazers theme, just because it's a thing you don't really hear.
Yeah.
You know, like the Imperial March is great, but it's like, Everybody I know uses the Imperial March on their phone to some degree. What else have we in the way of suggestions?
Well, we did get one suggestion. The inevitable suggestion, even though I specifically said not this, I did get the whole white wheat, dole wheat, sourdough,
yeah,
bagel
no,
thing.
Yeah, no,
someone else suggested, and this is an excellent suggestion, by the way, the theme from The Wire.
Hey, that's not bad. But then the question becomes which season, because it's a different version every season.
That also makes me think that I should maybe could be considering the theme from The Shield as well.
Oh, hey, I could see that.
Yeah.
And that's good, too, and it's real short. You know, it's already only like 20 seconds long or
something. It's attention-getting.
Yes.
Yeah, so, a listener sent me 4 suggestions, and I have to say, maybe it's just because I am lame, but here are a few suggestions for Springtone. I am not familiar with any of these songs.
Okay.
Love Bomb Baby by no. Tiger Tales.
No.
Street Anthem by Laz D.
Who is this from? Do we know who this is?
Listener Rick.
No, I got nothing.
The Defender, Buckner and Garcia.
Oh, The Defender. That's a follow-up to Pac-Man Fever.
Okay.
Okay, then one for three right now.
And the original version of Lapty Neck by the Max Rebo Band.
Okay, quit trying to out-hip everybody on the show. Just stop, whoever you are.
I don't know what any of those things are.
I think he's making up two of those artists at least. The Buckner and Garcia, they had a whole series of video game songs they did after Pac-Man Fever. I will grant that one of those maybe just... Tiger Tales seems like a thing that might be one of those bands the kids listen to. I think the other two are songs that don't exist, and he's trying to see if you'll go, oh, no, that's great. I'd thought about that one. I'm a big fan of that song by... Zapney or whatever they got. No, I got nothing. So, okay. All right. Are you any... Now, you have to tell me what it is, but in your own head, are you close to a decision?
So far, I have to say I'm leaning towards the Wire theme.
Okay.
That is it. But, I still have... There's still another day. You still have tonight that people could send things in, because I'm not going to make my decision until tomorrow, so...
So you send that to dawn@rickemerson.com. That is dawn@rickemerson.com. You do that by the end of Friday. And yours is, and plus you'll have our respect and the esteem of your friends and loved ones. So there you go. Hey, Dawn, speaking of Wire, let's talk about Squires Electric. If you do pick The Wire, though, now, are you going to just arbitrarily pick a season? Or are you just going to, because like I said, it's a different version for every season of the show.
Then we'll have to decide.
That was a double question, by the way, because now I realize you've not even finished season one of The Wire.
No, I haven't. I figured it just had a theme.
No, well, it has the same song. The thing is, it's always Down in the Hole by Tom Waits.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's a different version. Every season, did you watch Weeds?
I watched the first... couple of seasons. I didn't watch this season.
You know that thing they do in Weeds where it's the same song done by different artists? They do that, but it's just every season they would change artists.
Oh, okay.
So I think the first season, it's not Tom Waits' first season. It's Tom Waits' the second season. And then there's, I think, it's not the Neville brothers, but it's like one of the Neville guys, and it's like and then Steve Earle in the fifth season, and, you know, whatever. But it's, well, in any event, I'm just saying, at some point, if you decide to pick The Wire theme, you let me know, because I got my thoughts about which one you ought to use. Well, in any event, blah, 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 Wire. Squires Electric, you can find out more about them at squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Once again, 503-252-1609. And I had that moment happen last night where I was actually down. I was like maybe at 2 in the morning or something. I was going down. I was doing some laundry. And there's that thing where I was standing in front of the washing machine. And the washing machine had somehow been pulled out a little bit, I think, because Lara had dropped something behind there. Anyway, so I was, like, moving the washing machine around. And then I don't know whether this was, like, something spilled from the washing machine or whether it was raining and it was there's, like, a leak in the roof or if it was, you know, if she was drinking something, she'd spilled something. But at one point, I'm, like, pulling the washing machine out to see if something's broken because she's in bed. And I'm like, well, why is the washing machine pulled out? So I'm leaning back and behind the washing machine pulling it. And then I realize I'm standing in a puddle of water. And so it's raining outside and the wind is blowing. And I'm standing in a puddle of water and I'm in the basement. And I'm leaning back behind the washing machine where you get that weird, that mysterious... It's like that plug that it's a three-prong plug, but it's not like anything else in the house. It goes into that weird outlet where nothing else will fit.
It's plugging into the Cat 5 wires.
See, maybe. I don't even know. I have no idea how it's like, and I don't, you know, and then...
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, and how about this? It's like, and then there's that thing in your house where it's like an electrical cable but it's just metal. It's like a thick metal cable that is sort of, you know, it looks like a bendy straw.
It is. It's a metal bendy tube that is basically for encasing a whole bunch of wires.
And then it goes into a metal box of some kind. And you say, well, like, what is in that metal box? And you realize you have no idea. And that's when you understand just how phenomenally in over your head you are anytime you decide to just, like, add anything or fix. And the thing is, and they don't tell you this, like, when you go to, like, the hardware store or something, and you're there and you're buying, you know, like a ceiling fan or, you know, something. The guy goes, well, what you do is you just, you just tie this into your main wiring system, and you're going to be good to go. That'll be $94. And it's like, and they don't, you know, and you get home and you just take out the instructions. You have no idea what the hell you're talking about. So you can just, cut the Gordian knot, kids, by calling Squires Electric at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. And I'll tell you this, and honestly, sometimes you may not even need them to fix anything or install anything. Sometimes you've just moved into a place and you just want somebody who knows what they're talking about to come and look at it and say, no, it's fine. Nothing will explode if you plug stuff in and turn everything on. Like, you're fine. Because you just know the last guy who worked there, even if you are not the kind of guy to screw with your electrical system, the guy who lived in the place before you, she might have been a maniac. You never know. So, you know, sometimes you just want to feel good about it. You want a guy to come and look at the electrical system and say, no, it's fine. You know, you may proceed forward with boldness. So you contact them at 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. That is SquiresElectric.com. And it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business. They can make your life easier. That is SquiresElectric.com.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Indeed.
So, real quickly, I did want to share that the fellow who suggested the thing from The Wire did specifically say season 5, which
okay.
is
that's my
Steve
favorite
Earle.
Version, by the way. Well done. I'm not a big Steve Earle fan, but that he actually does without question. It's my favorite version of the song. So
that would have been it.
Fantastic.
Okay, Neil Young's attempt to transform a 1959 Lincoln Continental to run off battery power prompted a triple alarm fire that caused an estimated $1 million in damages. The San Francisco Chronicle reported Young's pet project, a company called LinkVolt, involved fitting the vintage car with electric batteries and a biodiesel-powered generator. The musician now believes the car's charging system ignited the November 9th blaze at his San Francisco warehouse.
By the way, see my statement earlier about, you know, you never know who owned the house before you and thought he knew how electricity worked.
Neil Young said, "We are still investigating the exact cause, although it appears to be an operator error that occurred in an untested part of the charging system. We are investigating the components involved with plug-in charging."
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The experimental vehicle was stored at a 3,500-square-foot warehouse where Young also kept guitars, paintings, vintage cars, and other memorabilia. Authorities said roughly 70% of the items were salvaged, but the fire cost at least $1 million in damages. Last year, he released Fork in the Road, an album which he said he dedicated to his Lincoln hybrid experiment. It went to number one in Norway.
I got to tell you, I detest Neil Young, and I know that I'm not supposed to, and I know that I'm supposed to hail him as the godfather of grunge or whatever. And I'm not even saying that I don't own any Neil Young. I believe, a single Neil Young record, which to be fair, I like quite a lot. Now I'm called Ragged Glory that came out many years ago. But just he personally, I've never spoken to him. I've never met him. I don't even think I've ever seen that many interviews with him. But he just annoys the hell out of me. And I don't know why. I can't quite put my finger on it. And the thing is that I'm not the only one who feels that way. And it's not like it's a thing I run into all the time. But I have talked to any number of people who said that Neil Young bugs them, and they can't really, like explain the reasons. Like, he's never done anything to me. You know,
I like Neil Young myself.
I have no explanation for it. It's all very bizarre. All right. By the way, if we can just take a little bit of a detour here. You know, I only wanted to mention this today because tomorrow there'll be no point in mentioning it. If you heard Legion of News earlier today, the noon hour, and you said to yourself, "What a flawless delivery of the news that is." That was and even today, even in this show, for the last couple hours here, the news has been delivered off Don's laptop as opposed to off paper, because we normally write everything out and then we print it, which we were unable to do today because the ink in the printer right now behind me, and this is not my usual sort of long, excoriating rant about how expensive printer ink is. Here's the thing. I don't understand, and when I ask this I know that there probably is an answer, but it's like pointless to tell me because the answer is just going to – the answer is not going to make me any less irritated by this. I don't understand. I get why from one brand of printer to another, there's a different kind of cartridge. I don't understand why, like HP, for example, has to have 700 different kinds of cartridges. It doesn't even seem like it's a money-making thing. You know what I mean? Because, like, it seems like that's got to cost HP more money. You know, why? It doesn't make any sense for either side of the equation for there to be a billion different kinds of ink cartridges. Here's why this matters. Don knows why this matters, but you probably don't. So we were out of ink yesterday. Don sent me a text. She's like, hey, remember to buy ink. And I know that you thought I would forget, and I didn't forget. I went to the Office Depot, and I should say that I love Office Depot. They're great
folks. And I
tried
to reward you with a cookie for remembering, but no bananas.
You know, and it's, you know, Office Depot, they're good folks, you know, and they get, they're probably like Starbucks. They get people coming in asking for weird things, you know, demanding, you know, because when you go into a place like Office Depot, the thing you see is guys talking to, you know, to whoever's behind the counter. And they expect the person behind the cash register to have an encyclopedic knowledge of the store's inventory, where the person will come in and they will ask something like insanely specific, you know, like, do you have that heat sensitive photo paper that goes to the 1972 Canon jet that has a unicorn to the top and, by the way, has the red stitching at the bottom? You know, not the adhesive kind, but the narrow kind that you use for letters. And, you know, and it's like they expect the person at the counter to know this. But, you know, the thing about this. So I go to the Office Depot, and by the way, it's not like I just blindly picked an HP ink cartridge off the shelf. I mean, it says on the side, like it has the name of – it says 6988, like on the side, which is the name of our printer. And incidentally, I asked the guy. I said, hey, I know that, like, you know, you may not work at HP, but you work here. So, like, tell me. And I think what I actually said is – I want you to look at this and confirm that I'm buying the right ink because I live in fear of being the guy who's like, especially after we didn't have any ink yesterday, and I was like, I don't want Dawn to have to read all her news off the laptop, and I don't want to be the jackass who shows up to work with the wrong ink cartridge. That would make me a retard. I don't want to prove everybody correct when they think that I will somehow mangle this job or bungle it or make a mess of it. And so I asked the guy, this is what I will do with my correspondent sometimes, is I will ask, like, Laura, you'll get this eventually, where I will ask you to read an email that I'm going to send, like a business email. I'll say, read this and make sure that I haven't accidentally slipped in a profanity or something or pasted porn or something into this. Just so, you know, my OCD thing of, like, having somebody independently verify that I have done things correctly before it's irrevocably, you know, decided. And I said, so this is the printer we got. Here's the ink. Yes, the correct thing. And he goes, nope, that looks to be correct. That's the right thing. And I'm like, awesome. And I go, and it's like I, you know, swipe the thing, and I buy the stuff, and I get in the car, and I come here. And it's, you know, and I walk in, and I do believe I came in the middle of a conversation between you and Sarah in which one of you was speculating that I would somehow screw this up. And I'm like, in your face, Rick Emerson didn't screw it up. Rick Emerson brought the ink for the printer right here. And you're like, that's fantastic. I can't wait to print out my news because I forgot to do it at home this morning. And then I take this out. And it's like, as soon as I took it out of the goddamn box, I realized that it was the wrong size. And I was going to say, like, they sold me the wrong size, which I guess they did. But it's not like the guy at the Office Depot did it with malice aforethought. But I mean,
is it possible that you just had trouble getting it into the printer?
Well, I said that this morning. Now, in my defense, I told
you. Because it does say on the side of the box that it's the right one.
In my defense, I did tell you this morning, I said, it's possible that I'm just not able to put this in correctly. I think actually the phrase I used was, I'm not the one who puts the ink in the printer. That's usually Bruce who does that. So I said, it's possible that I'm not able to put that in. That is, I did say that, like, right out of the gate. In fact, I think I asked you if you wanted to put it in, but you said, no, I've got to get this news together.
Yeah, I had to do so. And also, it's hard for me to get it in there because I'm shorter than
you.
You're
a lady, Dawn.
So it's hard. Well, I can't see into the top of the printer because we put the printer up way up high.
I do want you to verify, though, that these look like different cartridges, though.
They do, indeed.
This is what was in there before.
Yeah, no, those are different.
Here's what the guy sold me.
Yeah, no, those are not the same
again,
thing.
Again, it's possible that maybe they both fit in there, even though they're different shapes.
Hand them to me.
All right. And I was just having difficulty or something. I mean, I will grant you that maybe I just wasn't, because it's all I can do to get the goddamn ink out of there in the first place and then trying to put the new one in. So, you know, maybe that works. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
No.
They seem to be different cartridges altogether.
No, they are. And the I'd say that the length might not necessarily even be the issue. But when you look at the section where the ink
yeah.
know, is deposited.
Where it makes contact.
Yeah,
it's
one,
different.
One
it's
is longer
different,
than the
it's a different shape altogether.
Yeah, so no, these are not the same.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, so I looked at the side of the box and I asked the guy, and he's like, no, that's the right thing. But
apparently
it's not. So now, but see, now the thing is, I don't know how to solve it. You know, because it's not like I can go back and exchange the ink, but it's like now I have no idea how to pick up the correct ink.
See, I would take both of these if it was me.
So give
I
me
would
this.
Take both of them, and I would say.
Does that identify? Does the old one identify model? In other words, does the old ink have? Because the inks all have different numbers.
Well, unfortunately,
number codes.
The old one that was in there before is it's a remanufactured cartridge. It's not. Like, you bought the Office Depot HP brand, and this is some kind of, like,
made... Zeds?
Yeah, this is made by, like, slave children in Zimbabwe or something.
Okay.
But the same, I would just take them both in and say, this is what was in my printer, and this is what you sold. But supposedly this is right, so what do I do? Of course, they won't be able to help you, but that's what I would do.
That's the thing. It's like, you know... It's just,
and then I would just end up frustrated and angry.
It's that problem. Well, and, you know, it's that thing that like, happens with, when you're using Windows... Where, like, what you want more than anything is to magically summon, like, Steve Ballmer to your home office, and you just want to be able to point a gun at him and say, just make it work. Like, that's the thing. Like, I don't need to see the math. Just get me the thing that works. So, yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah, it's like the printer I'm using right now is the one that I had brought in here originally that we were going to use here, and then we decided we wanted a wireless printer. And it prints so well, and the quality is so gorgeous. The problem being that it uses four different cartridges.
That's fantastic.
It's got, like, the cyan and the yellow and the whatever and the black. And so it's kind of like...
Yeah.
At some point. And each one is really tiny. So it's like, I just know it's sometime soon I'm going to need to replace that black cartridge. And it's going to be, and that'll be $7,000 because you have no other choice.
It just doesn't make any sense. I don't understand why it is that, like, again, within a line, like HP, why they all have to have every model of HP printer has to have a different. Be like every car Ford made taking a different battery type.
Well, and plus they're charging you the equivalent of, like, something like $12,000 a gallon for ink.
Jesus. All right, that's it. That's the end of my printer rant. I just, we didn't talk about it during Legion of News because we were busy, doing the show. And at the beginning, I think I was going to start about the beginning of the show today. And then we got distracted by the guy calling him by Ben calling him with McRib, which was great, by the way, because I just would have started the show angry. And so instead, I began the show bemused. I'm going to eat these Chex Mix. I'll tell you what, we'll do we should take the top five and probably move that to tomorrow with Mr. Big Jim Willing, who's going to be here to do another installment of, ooh, these smell good, Humor Me, Comedy 101, tomorrow focusing on comedian Sam Kinison. But we should get to, we got at least one watch to do here. All right, hold on, here's Don Taylor, the news desk.
Oh, let's do our clown.
All day.
Let's do our clown watch.
At the dentist? I'm sorry, what?
Clown watch.
All right, that's one of the only impressions I can do. That's, I forget the actor's name. He plays Guy Patterson in That Thing You Do.
Oh, yeah. I love him.
No, there's that whole sequence. It's one of the, it's a dumb impression, but it's like, when he's on the phone with Charlize Theron, and she's like, obviously got the hots for her dental guy, and she's like, I have to be the dentist. It's going to take like, I have to get a crown removed. It's going to take like all day. And he says, all day? At the dentist? That's exactly how he says that.
Hmm. That's very good.
I'm sorry, what are we doing?
Clown watch.
Oh, I'm sorry, here's your clown watch. These are really good. Wow. You want one?
Sure, why not?
Wow, those are fantastic. Those, now, are those from the same company that make the Bugles?
Yes.
How good are those?
They basically are
the Bugles.
The chocolate peanut butter Bugles. It's just they're in a different shape.
They're square. They're square. They're Bugles shaped like little pillows.
Yeah.
They're pillows of fun.
God, those are good.
I don't mean that in the Piper Laurie way.
Wow.
All right.
Okay.
Here's your clown watch. This is Don Taylor.
I have to swallow now.
At the dentist? Okay.
One of the world's top rodeo clowns headbutted a woman during a pre-rodeo party in Queensland, Australia.
Excellent.
Shane Mad Dog Simpson, 35, pleaded guilty in the McKay Magistrates Court on Tuesday to assault causing bodily harm to Katie Richardson on March 27th this year. The court heard Simpson works most of the year on the lucrative U.S. rodeo circuit, had been drinking scotch at a pre-rodeo party when a prankster began switching the lights on and off. Ms. Richardson went to investigate and was headbutted by Simpson, who claimed he was having an argument with the culprit and, quote, Ms. Richardson got in the way. Simpson was locked up in the McKay Watch House for 24 hours after pleading guilty to the assault and faced losing his right to work in the USA if he had a conviction that was recorded against him.
You know, rodeo clowns, here's the thing about that. That's such a strangely specific profession. You know, it's not like you're a cowboy or a ranch hand or something, because even though it's not the 1850s, there are guys who still work on ranches. That's an actual profession.
And you're not actually a wrangler.
And you're not a regular
even
clown.
Even though you are wrangling.
Right, and you're not a regular clown because it takes, I would imagine, it takes a specific kind of training because it is more dangerous than just like, you know, going to like, you know, being the guy who squirts people at the cancer ward or whatever. So is there like a specialized clown college for rodeo clowns? Like a rodeo clown school of some kind?
I don't know.
I mean, there must be. Like, and here's the other thing, and I mean this sincerely. I wonder, from where do rodeo clowns come? Because you figure if you grow up on a farm, if you grow up in the country, you know, maybe you see that lifestyle, that culture, and you end up being like a rodeo performer in the, you know, like you're the guy roping the steer or whatever.
Yeah.
Where does the rodeo clown grow up? That like that's the thing he does for a living.
Yeah, I want to be that guy that like waves my arms at the bull and then jumps into a barrel so the guy doesn't get trampled.
I mean, it's like there's got to be. Like, I want to find a rodeo clown and just say, like, where were you when you had the epiphany that, like, this was your life?
Yeah, when you realized that this was a skill that you had, something that you were gifted at.
And do rodeo clowns make a lot of money? That's my other thing. I wonder.
Think they probably do. I would imagine, because it is really dangerous.
Yeah, you see, you would think so. But then it's like sometimes you hear about those jobs where it's like they seem like they ought to pay a lot of money, and then they don't because, again, it's a calling. And so people do it for next to nothing because they feel that it's their destiny.
Well, if this guy, who apparently, I guess, is Australian and spends most of the year working the—
swear to God, I thought you were going to say autistic for some reason.
Spends most of the year working the U.S. rodeo circuit, I'm sure he probably makes a fine living.
Maybe. Or maybe he doesn't make that fine of a living, but maybe his living expenses are lower because he's traveling with the rodeo.
Yeah.
So he gets like a per diem or something.
As long as he's not spending it all on scotch. In between headbutting people.
That's true.
All the money goes to scotch and grease paint.
It's your clown watch for Thursday. By the way, I don't think I have time to talk about this now, but I've gotten several emails about this. I will probably have to do it tomorrow just because I want to, I want to give it the appropriate time. Thank you, by the way. I saw that you sent me the thing with the guy with the nail in his eye.
Yes.
So I will do a little screen capture of that, and I'll post that so everybody can see it. I want to mention this just so you all know that I have received it. I will talk about it more tomorrow. This really is, I mean, it really is like the best audience ever, because I mentioned that thing, I think, 2 days ago, where it was talking about the, you know, movies or things only you remember. And I was talking about this cartoon in which people were playing baseball against aliens from space and the whatever. And I swear to God, I went home that night and like it was like right out of the gate, a guy emailed me not only the name of the thing, but he sent me a link to the YouTube video of it.
Oh.
And then subsequently, two or three other people were like, hey, is this the— – and it was exactly the thing. So—
– what was it?
We'll talk about it more tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
I'm just going to say that I might as well just say it now. It's a thing called Take Me Up to the Ball Game. I was going to do it tomorrow because I wanted to give a credit, but I will do that tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll mention by name the guy who first sent it to me and then the other folks who sent it along as well. Because I talked about that and the Vincent Price movie where he's doing the prosecuting of man and whatever. Mm-hmm. So they sent me that as well. But the Take Me Up to the Ball Game, the guy sent me a link to the actual and it was a half hour television special that was animated that aired in like, I guess it would have been the early 80s. I don't have the Wikipedia entry in front of me. The weird thing about it is I almost said in the description that it looked a little bit like Heavy Metal, the cartoon, sort of like maybe like a, you know, like a low budget version of Heavy Metal. It turns out that it's weird that I thought that because the companies had nothing to do with one another. But the company that made this Take Me Up to the Ball Game thing, I guess they were at one point approached about doing the Heavy Metal movie and then didn't. And so Heavy Metal went to some other company because they passed on it. So apparently Heavy Metal, the look of that was to some degree based on the animation this company did, because this company was who they originally approached about doing it.
So without Take Me Up to the Ball Game,
there would be no Heavy Metal in the way we know it now. Also, if those of you who were fans of the Leonard Nimoy's television series, Lights, Camera, Action, the company that did Take Me Up to the Ball Game, in which, yes, humans played baseball against aliens in the future, where everybody cheated because that was the way that baseball had evolved, and then the humans, they didn't want to, they'd been transported to the future to play baseball. They didn't want to cheat because they brought with them their Earth values of playing fairly, and then they managed to win without cheating, which revolutionized, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's a whole thing, and then there was a moral and whatever. And at the end, by the way, of the episode, two of the aliens against whom they played baseball, and like one of the announcers, flew off into space, clearly stoned out of their minds, by the way. So more shades of heavy metal there.
I thought you were just going to say something like, and they all became friends.
And then there was a raping.
No, they were stoned.
No, they were all stoned, and they were like, the ship was all like jittery and like weaving as it took off. And they're like heavy-lidded eyes. Like, that was a great baseball game. It just clearly baked. The company passed up making the movie heavy metal because they wanted instead to make a movie, which another thing that I think like I have seen. The company that made Take Me to the Ball Game passed on heavy metal to make a movie called Rock and Rule. Who has seen Rock and Rule?
Not me.
Rock and Rule is a post-apocalyptic animated musical in which a race of like hybrid animal humans, you know, it's a battle versus good and evil and whatever. But there's like this like half man, half like baboon of some kind. And he's modeled on Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, and also he's a rock star.
That I'm familiar with. But that it's I've seen.
Yeah, and it's after a nuclear war, and his name is Mach.
I know what you're talking about.
That's Rock and Rule.
Okay.
That is the film that this company made. Instead, they're like, heavy metal, schmetty, schmetal. We're going to make Rock and Rule and lose all of our money. And they did, by the way. They put the entire company's assets on the line for that and then imploded, only to remake their money years later with the Care Bears films.
Huh.
The end. So there you go. So I want to thank everybody, and again, I will be able to do it by name tomorrow because I filed it away in a thing that I then forgot. But I had like 70 people who were like, you know, it was like, it's called, you know, Take Me Up to the Ball Game. So there you go.
The collective consciousness of the Emerson audience.
The epilogue, and then we got to get out of here for the day. But the epilogue to that is somebody, our friend Kara, who's a longtime listener, she posted on Facebook. She's like, hey, that's Take Me Up to the Ball Game. And then she, in turn, posted a question about a thing only she remembered. And she said, what was that show about the kids who grew up in the town where there was a little Stonehenge thing and there were mysterious supernatural happenings and they had to figure it out? And I think she was asking me because she posted the answer in that question. Before I even got a chance to answer it, a listener had answered that question for her. And it was The Third Eye, which is a program that aired on Nickelodeon back in the day. So I'm saying together we really do know like everything there is to know. I mean, we have the answers to all things. We'll do the Corpse Watch tomorrow, the top five tomorrow. Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here to talk about the life and legacy of Sam Kinison as part of a Humor Me Comedy 101. Don't forget to send your ringtone submissions to Don Taylor. And also next Thursday, save the date. Next Thursday will be Thanksgiving. The Rick Emerson Show's Thanksgiving Spectacular for 2010. Next Thursday, the 25th of November. So thank you for listening. After a brief musical interlude here, we will have an encore of today's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you. These muddy buddies are really like effing up my diction today. Comes to you live from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and so forth. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you courtesy of a generous grant from y'all. We thank you for listening. It is Thursday, November 18th, 2010, and that is the frequency. Kenneth, see y'all tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Be safe. Bye now.